Welcome to episode 89, Hella Bass Bass Fishing Podcast. This week, super fun episode, Matty Wong, California angler, Bass Nation national champion, going to the elites. This is a long episode, but once you start listening, Matty's a super fun dude to listen to, easy listen, the time's going to fly by. You're going to love this one. Enjoy the episode. This week, the Hella Bass Bass Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Arsenal Fishing. Arsenal Fishing offers premium custom-made performance apparel and tackle. Arsenal delivers a wide variety of custom-designed baits, accessories, and tools, along with unique utilitarian apparel for all outdoor enthusiasts. As part of their support, you can use code HellaBass15 to save 15% on all purchases at arsenalfishing.com to support the show. Now let's get back to helping you catch more bass and suck less. All right, we're live. Another Wednesday night, another Hella Bass Live. Should be a good one tonight. I'm excited to have Matty Wong on tonight. What's up, Matty?
How's it going, man? Thanks again for having me. I'm excited to be here. Excited to talk with a bunch of your subscribers and, you know, just talk fishing.
Yeah, that's awesome. We are a few minutes late because Hollywood had to do his makeup. Get ready, like had to,
sorry,
like,
guys.
You know, and like he's big time. I see Tim and Daniel. What's up, guys? How's the sound and video? Make sure it's good before we get too far into this. Ed Cowan. Speaking of Bass Nation legends, I think Ed's from like New Jersey, and I think he's fished the national championship like 7 times and made it the classic like twice. You're wow. Here, Ed, right on time, 9 Eastern, 8 Central. You are here.
Jeez, you're a stick. Holy smokes.
Tim says we're good. Sean says we're good. Sean's like the resident, like, expert streamer. Like, if you go on any stream, like, Smallmouth Crush, that's yeah. Like he's there. So
awesome.
What's up, Double Digit Fishing?
Yeah, Dominic. That's what...
yeah, I was going to say, I don't recognize that one. That sounds a little West Coast-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot of double-digit bass in Minnesota. Actually, there's never been one caught.
Really?
Yeah, our state record is like 8 pounds, 12 ounces.
Oof. All right.
Punch likes your hat. He's a big Mega Bass Bobo.
Oh, right on, Punch.
Bayou Mega Burner? I think Bayou Burner is from like the Monroe area. He's commented a few of my videos. I think he's like a Wachita really? Local.
Oh, dang, dude. I would love to go in, back in some in the bay.
You hear it. Cheetah in the house. What's up, Cheetah?
Yeah, Cheetah. My guy. My twin. My guy. Everyone kept mistaking us.
you're quite a bit taller than Cheetah. I mean, let's
I'm like, ah. Cheetah put on some high heels. We made it work.
Man, Chris. The chat is fire tonight. What's up, Peter?
Yeah, twin.
Cool. West Coast, what up, Maddie? Man, the chat. This is. I need a moderator, like stat. Do you think you would moderate my streams between tournaments this year for a little cash on the side, maybe? Or
yeah, sure. Just as long as you give me like you know at least 3 back rubs and like maybe like a bandit. Crank or
as long as they're virtual back rubs, we can make that work.
Small mouth hoodie.
That's my Arsenal hoodie.
That's cool.
It says chasing wolf packs on the back.
Oh.
All right. Let's see. So yeah, lots of people.
Got some people in the
Jared, home. Why don't you save that question? We'll come back to it a little later. We'll get into this.
We will dive in.
We'll talk about regionals in general. Man, lots of cool. Lots of members. That's awesome. Cool. We'll just first of all, before we get too far into it, thank Arsenal Fishing for supporting the stream and everything we do here in the channel. Without them, it's not as good of a production. So thanks to those guys. Shout out to them. They are about to kick off a whole bunch of Black Friday sales. So you can use any of those links down below or just hit arsenalfishing.com. My code won't be any good right now because their sales will probably be better. So So there's that. That's awesome. And today is going to be all about the national championship. My plan, I didn't really tell Maddie this, is to basically talk about how we got there, any kind of pre-practice or pre-planning, the actual practice. And because, like, there was a ton of questions last week when I had Pete on, when we were talking about rods, and I was like, next week we're going to deep dive. So we're going to deep dive. We're getting the nitty gritty and basically learn how Maddie took me to the cleaners 2 weeks ago. So,
oh man.
Yeah. What's up? Shout out
to Lateral Vision.
Lateral Vision. Is that like your own clothing line or a buddy or what? I see you repping the Lateral Vision.
Yeah. It's one of my sponsors. You know, I've been working with them. They've been really supportive of me. Thanks, Jay. Been super supportive of me for the past, year and a half or something. As I've been doing like some local tournaments, they've been helping me out and I've been, you know, giving back also with them and making sure, like, you know, driving some traffic through my YouTube and whatnot. And it's just cool to be able to bring up like a local California company and be able to, like, as I step up into this new venture, to be able to bring them with me. They've been, you know, super supportive and they're a bunch of good dudes, and they make a bunch of really awesome like comfortable, like simple things like t-shirts, and I was wearing their sweats on stage. And then they make some jackets and some hoodies. Their hoodies are actually really sick. They actually did like a Capture Fish collab. So, it's called lateralvisionbrand.com, and you'll see a Capture Fish collab, and actually a percentage of that goes to me, which is really cool. So
you're big time. You got your merch line.
Yeah. Well, that's what the next. Kids
say, right? Merch. That's my merch.
Merch. Yeah. Yeah. That's the merch. Yeah. Them, and you know, and Mega Bass is also, you know, a huge, huge supporter. Thus the Mega Bass drip. You can tell I got a couple of Sparky Shads and a couple of those things around there. But yeah, dude.
Goal number one, get a selfie with Zaldane with matching hats.
Dude, it's crazy, man. Just like in the past couple of days, the people that I've been able to talk to, it's just been Mike Iaconelli called me, and I talked I have an extra white screen. Which... oh, my Chinese brother. they have some like really good stuff, man. They're legit. No, but as I was saying, like Mike Iaconelli called me, and I talked to him for like 45 minutes, and I was like, oh my God, dude, like, are you kidding? Like, and then, it was wild. And then talked to Carl Jochumsen and talked to Brandon Polinick, and John Cruz gave me a shout. And, it's just neat to just talk to everyone, and everyone's been really like supportive of like, hey man, you had any questions? I know it's overwhelming your first year. Like, dude, reach out. Da-da-da-da. I'm just like, oh my gosh, like just nuts.
Pretty wild. That's awesome. Yeah. Jay was my boatmate at Pickwick. He was right next to me. Which is kind of cool, because like you meet a ton of people, especially those that are within like three or four boats of you in the boatyard, and you spend a lot of time talking, hanging out. Because like we'll talk about that later, but we really didn't meet until what, the day two night meeting, really? Like,
yeah.
Right? So, oh, look, it's your personal driver.
It is. Mr. Nate Towles. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool. All right, let's where do we even start? So you get there by being in a club. So like what's the story, but like what's your local club? How'd you get into a club back in California?
Yeah. So in 2018 was the first year I did the Googles and researched how do I start tournament bass fishing? I've always wanted to rewind a bit. I've bass fished ever since I was a little kid, you know, growing up in Hawaii. For those of you guys that don't know my story, born and raised on Oahu, Hawaii, you know, grew up fishing this little lake called Lake Wilson. So targeting peacock bass and smallmouth bass in the rivers. I almost held the state record smallie when I was, I think I was 13, which was like a 4.25. I missed it by like 2 ounces. I was so bummed. But I've always, it was a dream of mine to always compete. But at the same time, I'd hear this term and I just didn't want to be one of them. And it's a, like being a donator. And I didn't want to, you know, start donating when I first started tournament fishing. I wanted to be able to kind of hit the ground running and have a lot of these techniques solid in my arsenal and understand, like, what does it really take to start competing? So after I felt, you know, after putting a couple of years on the Delta, after putting in, some time on like Castaic and a couple of the local lakes here, I literally did a simple Google search for, you know, bass club, you know, local bass club fishing tournaments, whatever. And I found the Ventura County Bass Club. And they're a Bass Nation affiliated club, which was important because after researching, I wanted to fish the Bass Nation events in California for the qualifiers and whatnot. And they're like, yep, well, you got to start with, you have to join a club that's affiliated. So that's what paid my dues with Ventura County Bass Club. I fished a tournament with them, my first club event. I actually ended up winning it, and I was on Castaic, and that was like kind of came to a shock to me because some of the guys, they've been fishing it for a while, you know. And so that was really cool. It was definitely like a confidence boost. And yeah, and then I fished all of 2019 as a co, because one of the guys in the club's like, hey, dude, you should fish it as a co first just to get used to like the format, get used to the travel, get used to like going to a couple different, couple new lakes. And so I did. And I got my butt handed to me. Like I absolutely got, I think I finished up like third from last in 2019. Because I was trying to power fish from behind the boat, and I was stubborn. I knew how to fish a Senko, but I wasn't being smart about it. In my head, I was like, you know, I can fish and make all these decisions, but not like Nathan Taos, who's tuning in, who's like the master of like being a co-angler. Actually, Nathan ended up winning that year, blew everyone out of the water and won champion for the Coes and Bass Nation 2019.
So you guys are in the same club?
No. So he's part of, I think, Bakersfield Bass Club. Okay. And Nate, you can chime in and correct me. Yeah, it's... basically decided after I had a really tough event on the Delta where my boater ended up like right after takeoff, gets up on pad and his boat alarm just turns on. And it's this older gentleman, really nice guy, but he's like full, just like pedal to the metal flying. And then his alarm's just going off. I'm like, hey, did you hear that? Do you hear that? And he's like, yeah, I wasn't doing that yesterday. And we ran 8 miles with his alarm on. And what ends up happening is his boat goes into guardian mode and we're only able to idle. I try to troubleshoot with his son, who's a Mercury mechanic, on the phone while the tide's changing. We were fishing the Delta. And so I'm like, I'm missing the bite opportunity. I'm like, whatever. I'm just trying to like get going. We don't figure it out. We end up having to idle back. I take a 2.5 hour nap as he's idling back to the ramp. And that's when I told myself, I'm like, I'm done. I got to fish it as a boater next year. So I made the decision in 2020 to fish it as a boater. And my first event was an event that I ended up like I bombed the previous year as a co, and I knew that Swim Baits won it. And so I spent a good amount of the rest of 2019 learning Swim Baits and whatnot, and went back and led it day one and got second, fell short by I think 0.5 pound, and ended up getting second my very first regional qualifier, or I should say state qualifier, for the Bass Nation. And then COVID hit, and then our whole our season got cut short. Normally, I think it's five qualifiers for the state team got cut down to three. So they're going to take your best two out of three. And the next event was at Nacimiento, which Nathan's also a super stick at. They just won the TOC there. So I ended up taking fourth at Nasi. And then they're like, yeah, dude, that's enough for the team. Like, you made the team because it was like the short season. And I had a chance to go and fish for the AOI up at Clear Lake, but because my whole world living in Los Angeles at the time had shut down due to COVID, I was like, I can't really afford to drive 8 hours and, like, you know, even camp. It wasn't in the books. So I was like, hey, I made it to regionals. I'm stoked. That's all that matters. And so regionals were scheduled for February of 2021. And actually went out, practiced again with Nathan, and all this stuff you can find on my YouTube channel. I started kind of vlogging back where it starts at Nacimiento. I didn't get the second place finish at Pine Flat, but the next one at Nasi, I was actually with Nathan again. This is actually like a Nathan, like, he should be up on here, but he stuck himself barb deep his first time. And this guy, like, chases tunas and all kinds of other stuff. He's never stuck himself barb deep before. And this fool, we're like in the middle of just like stroking spotted bass, and he gets stuck barb deep, and he's like, do I push it through? And I'm like, don't push it through. I got it, dude. I've like removed three hooks this year, bro. You're good. And we did the parade trick, pull it out. And we ended up finishing up and had a decent day. At least I did. Nathan dumped a really good largemouth that he still talks about to this day. But so that was, you know, it was it's cool to follow along on Capture Fish. If you guys haven't subscribed to the channel, please go ahead and subscribe and turn on the notification and all that good stuff.
Actually, better yet, just go check out some videos.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want people to subscribe if they're not going to watch. So.
Yeah. Watch all of them. Just start from the beginning.
Just all of them. If you go down in the description, there should be an app, Capture Fish. You can click on that. It'll take him to him. He's got some good stuff, especially for you West Coast guys or anybody that's interested in largely California fishing. That's what it is, most of it.
Yeah. Mixed in with a little bit of everything. I got some James River from, like, Fishing Missouri. I got Table Rock on there. Nice. I have a little bit of New Orleans fishing down there in Louisiana. I have a little bit of Ohio fishing. A little bit of everything, man. And also I get some, there's an episode or two of me fishing back home on Oahu and catching peacock bass. And then I got so a little bit of mix of everything. That's why it's called Capture Fish, not Capture Bass, but I think it's kind of turned into Capture Bass because that's been my main focus. Havasu was crazy because it was my fourth trip to Havasu ever. And if you haven't fished Havasu, it's a clear water fishery that gets fed in by the Colorado River. And there's two rivers, the top and at the bottom. And then there's a big basin, which they call the basin. And then it goes into another series of a more narrowed lake, really, really clear water and whatnot. Nice, man. Good call. It set up a lot like the California Delta. It also set up a lot like Castaic and some of the other lakes. But then you have these cages everywhere, which is like these massive like habitats and whatnot, which is really cool. And I really think it's helped the fishery tremendously. So shout out to Arizona and their fishery department, because you guys have done a great job. I found a couple solid fish in practice. They were starting to pre-spawn. These smallmouth were starting to pre-spawn. They're starting to stage up in areas they weren't really far backing some cuts, but I found a couple good fish in practice. Found a really cool bite. And day one, I stuck like 18 and a half pounds when the average bag size was 8. Nice. And Taylor was just behind me with, 16 pounds day one. And then we had a canceled day two because of wind. It blew 45 mile per hour. There was like 3 to 4 foot rollers. It was a mess. And it actually pushed a lot of my fish around, unfortunately. I wasn't able to, I ended up catching 3 fish the last day, but, with a, I think it was 9.5 pounds for 3. But that was, it just bumped me down 2 spots. I ended up finishing 3rd overall, which was my best finish to date, then. I was crazy pumped, you know. Bassmaster wrote a story on me about my start of bass fishing and how I acquired my old 1990 bass boat. That was really neat. That was, you know, being at the front, like the cover of Bassmaster, .com. It was crazy. 'Cause I was, you know, just, you know, being a kid, I've always been interested and always enamored by, you know, just the whole fishing world, and especially the bass world, because it's something that I've always been into. You know, I was like the kid in the 90s that was watching Bill Dance and Roland Martin on VHS. You know, I've always been obsessed with it. And so the fact that actually I got like a front page, you know, spread with like me wearing a buff and like holding 2 big smallies, like it looked ridiculous, but it was like long leads takes day 1, something like, and it was crazy. So yeah, that was actually the last day on Havasu during the regionals. And yeah, man, that was something. And I that was my first time ever, like, also like leading. Well, it was my second time ever leading event going into the last day, but that was my first big event leading it and going into the last day and feeling that pressure and whatnot. I'm like, oh, it's a different beast when you're leading it. It's crazy,
so
man.
Did the full field fish days both days?
Yeah. Full field. Yeah. They didn't cut anyone down. And so what ended up happening was Taylor actually snuck up and he fished consistent as he does. And he ended up winning. So he won. I think an Arizona local got 2nd. And then, I came in 3rd.
It's probably Steve Lund.
Maybe. I'm not sure. Yeah.
He's the guy that was supposed to be there, but then he got COVID the week before the Nationals.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that was him. Oh, man. Yeah, that was a bummer.
Who actually fished with me in 2014, and I met him in 2014.
No way. Yeah. Oh, that's so wild, man. That's so cool. But yeah, here's the Arizona local.
Yeah, so let me see. So you fished 1 year as a co. The next year, you fished as a boater, made it to regionals, almost won the regional, made nationals. Okay. So bass fishing is pretty easy for you.
No, man. I like to play. It's something that it makes sense to me. I've always been a nerd when it comes to like whether it's the ocean, whether it's a river or a lake. I've always been extremely intrigued by like fish behavior and why fish do certain things, and also just being out in nature. I'm like the first guy to be like, oh, did you hear that? That was a red-tailed hawk. You know, like I'll be like that one weirdo in the middle of a cove, like not even fishing, but just staring up because there's like a family of woodpeckers, you know. I'm in love with the outdoors. I'm in love with nature. And so for me, I'm hyper-focused when I'm in those out on the lake or on a body of water. 'Cause I feel like everything has to play, you know, that everything plays with each other in a sense where there's, you can get little tips and little clues that maybe some things don't even feel like they're related in a way. You know, like the fact that if there's like, you know, like a colony of ants, but near that colony of ants, that there's like a little bit of a slide because of, you know, runoff or whatnot, then there's probably going to be bluegill. Oh, look, sure enough, there's bluegill. Oh, look at that. And there's a bass. You know, it's like those, all those little things like kind of like connect. And also like fishing the Delta like helps a lot with that, because you'll be, you know, you'll understand when do the blackbirds spawn? Oh, and who cares about blackbirds and when they're on nests and when they're spawning? Is like, well, blackbirds get smoked by bass. and it's a forage for them. You know, same thing with like little baby ducks. It's like when in the springtime, or you know, whenever the waterfowl or certain things like that, these are all just like parts of the forage. So no, bass fishing isn't easy. It's just intriguing, and it's such a fun game. And I'm super grateful and really humbled to have moved this quickly throughout my short career. So yeah, it's a trip, man. I was definitely intimidated going to the Nationals, especially making that that 25-hour drive solo. Thanks, Nathan. If he was able to do it, I know his work. He's probably put. Yeah, I know he had to work. So, and I made fun. I had like a good time of my trek, which I'm about to drop on Monday. The first part of this series, which is me leaving California and making my way to Oklahoma, and then I end up fishing this little place called Telawanda, and then I end up fishing Caddo Lake. Where my buddy Dominic fished a tournament there recently. And I had a great time at Caddo Lake. And then I head into Louisiana and start the whole practice, nice. Which was crazy because we were also practicing. And, you know, I don't know how big your gas tank was on your tinny, but I have like one working gas tank on my old Ranger. So I have 14 gallons to play with. And so when I watched, so my port side, if you look at my starboard side gas tank, which is right under my elbow, that's basically busted. And I have one port side tank that I run on that old Yamaha Pro V, which has an aluminum welded starter to it, which I almost didn't fish Nasi Meno because it fell off during practice. So it's been a crazy road, man, to get to where this is. Cause like, and she's like held on through all of it, you know, and it's crazy. You know, like it's true. You know, as Dominic says, you don't need a 100K boat. I was starting to get tripped out in my head about that, you know, cause I knew that a lot of guys, you know, coming to the Nationals, we're going to be fishing out of dope rigs because most of them are, you know, have been doing this for a very long time and have a lot of experience on the water. And, you know, I thought in my head, I'm like, well, maybe if I can get like a, you know, a newer boat or something like that with newer electronics, like maybe at least live scope or something like that. I think that would help just because being able to like look through an area to see if there's even bait or something, it's just huge that you can like pinpoint certain things. And one of my buddies told me, you know, he's like, hey, dude, don't forget that you were able to do what you've done so far out of the old Ranger. So you getting all spun out and like anxious and stressed about getting a new boat prepped up to go to the Nationals, don't worry about that. You can do it out of your old Ranger. And after that combo, I was like, yeah, you know, he's right. And if it's in the cards and if it works out, then it'll work out. And so I did my diligence and made sure that my trailer got all brand new bearing buddies on it, packed them full of grease, spent like an additional like $400 just to make sure all that stuff was cherry. The guy made sure to like rerun all my trailer lights. So that was good. I made sure that my 4Runner had brand new transmission fluid, brand new oil change and like fresh tires. And I just did as much prep as I possibly could, just knowing I had basically the longest solo drive I've ever done. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, I grew up on an island where the longest drive is an hour and a half. And that's in traffic.
I'm just going to say that must have been traffic.
Which we have like the worst in the nation too, which is crazy. People are like, Hawaii traffic. What? It gets bad. But yeah, no, it's it for me. I mean, now after what happened, I mean, she's retired now. I'm never gonna get rid of that boat. It holds a lot of sentimental value for me. So if anybody don't know the story, you can go ahead and also you can check it out on Bassmaster.com. They wrote a pretty Andrew Collette made a pretty cool article. On my Uncle Bob, you know, who passed and who I got that boat from.
That was a cool story.
Yeah, there's a lot of sentimental value to that boat for me. So me and my family, I should say.
So is that like an 18, 19 footer?
It's a 1710.
1710. You said it was 19 what?
1990.
Carb jobs. This is still like two-stroke carburetor.
Dude, the guy at the Yamaha, wagon. Dude, I walked up to him. He's like, "Is that your boat?" And I'm like, "Yes, sir." He's like, "I hope to God nothing happens to you this week." And I was like, "What? Why is that?" He's like, "Cause I don't got nothing for your boat."
I'm like, "I got electrical tape."
And... yeah, I got duct tape. But yeah, I asked him like, "Hey, what's the nut size at least so I can change my prop out if I like, you know, kill a deadhead?" And he's like, "Oh, it's an inch and 16th." I'm like, "Thanks, dude." So. Yeah, that was the good help. I mean, everyone there was super rad. Right on, man. Thanks, Michael. That's awesome. Appreciate it. Yeah, but yeah, it's, you know, I knew it was kind of crazy because I think. It was like a day before, I think it was in our off limits day where Lee Livesey wrote an article or got interviewed on an article. And he's like, "Okay, where is it going to win? Like, where is it going to be taken on the Ouachita River and all this stuff? You know, like, what's it going to take?" And the first thing that comes out, he's like, Darbone Bayou is the place where historically majority of these tournaments are won, where the larger fish are, you know. And mm-hmm. So my whole approach, and I saw you actually ran up and put in at the spillway, right? Like one yep. of the days. I just knew that one, I just don't have good enough electronics to even make that run. I'd literally
or enough running. Gas. You wouldn't or have enough, had yeah. enough gas.
Yeah, I wouldn't have made it for sure.
I barely had enough gas with 21 gallons to get there and back. Jeez. With that little Yamaha. So like
that's yeah, that was a wild like because I've seen it, like that was one of the first things that popped up on YouTube was like run to Darbone Bot, like which was you which you told me on the bus, and I was just like, dude, this is like the fact, like it just looked insane. And that was the first like taste that I had of a Ouachita was watching your video, and that's so funny that it was you, but it was mind-blowing to me because I saw like the S-curve section and I saw all the stumps, and it was just, I'm like, that's terrifying, because there's a couple mm-hmm. sections on the delta that get a little hairy, but like, you know, for the most part, if you're running it on a low tide, you can see everything and whatnot. But oh man, that was just so daunting. So every single run that I would do in practice, I knew that I had to do it from square one, and square one was the ramp, and I'd be doing, you know, yeah, I would be doing myself a disservice if I were to go and put in anywhere else to go and take a look, because I wouldn't know if I'd be able to make that run successfully and back. So yeah, day one, I ran south. I found, you know, Google Earthing and whatnot. There was a couple cuts that I thought that might be like the deal. And I, you know, we ran south. I actually caught my first fish. Oh no, my second fish on a Ouachita was a frogfish. Yeah. Flipped up a white frog, got two taps on it, and thing got smoked.
Like in a lake or right on the main river?
Main river. And then Nathan got a good one on a drop shot. And I was like, okay, like, all right, like that's a little clue. Like, didn't get bit for a while, roll up on a tree, like flip in there, get bit, shake it. I'm like, okay, that's another clue. We run, I think it was like another, must have been 10 miles south. Like ran down south. There's like one other little bayou that comes in. I remember coming off a pad and like pretty far from the opening of this bayou. Mm-hmm. And we like let down. It's like 15 foot. I look over, there's like a stump in 15 foot. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, are you serious? Like, oh my gosh, like trim up everything. And Nathan and I were looking over like, holy smokes, dude, this place is legit. This is true. I watched his videos. He doesn't fear stumps or.
I was gonna say you should see some of my lacrosse stuff, or not lacrosse, Wabasha River State Tournament.
Dude, that's wild. Yeah, I'll definitely take a look. But yeah, it was you know, it was wild because so I have a funny little bit to add on Brian Kershaw when on day one, but. So we run south. We see all those like really crazy trees in deep water, and deep water being 15 foot. Like, how is there a tree?
Like in the river or in the lake?
It was in the river.
Okay.
Like heading into one of these side sloughs. And there was one other guy that was coming out, and like, we only ended up getting like one bite in there. Get scared to death by a spoonbill, and then and then another like Asian carp jumped out, and it was like almost took me out. I was freaking out. It was wild. But I was like, okay, well, nothing's in here that looks promising. We already got a couple bites on the main river. Let's try and stopped a couple places. There's all this new riprap that's getting put in by like Army Corps of Engineers to like prevent flooding and whatnot. I'm like, okay, maybe if there's no machinery there, that those fish have kind of settled in on that new habitat. Cranked a little bit of that, got a couple squeakers, nothing keepers, no keepers. And I was like, you know what? I'm not feeling south. And then that's when that article came out. And Nathan's like, dude, you just got to go and take a look at it. Like, you're going to kick yourself if we don't go in and just take a look. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I really don't want to. But
so day two, you peek your nose into Darbonne?
Yep. So day two, ran up, checked that initial stretch right when you get into Darbonne, right when you have to come on. Right in that wake zone on that left-hand side.
Looks good. Those,
great, great deep water access, a couple nice little isolated laydowns for that little stretch, and then mud. Nathan sticks one right behind the boat, like a 3.5 pounder right there. And there was two other boats nearby. And I'm just like, dude, really? He's like, I'm sorry, man. He's like, I didn't swing. And I look back on the footage and he's like, cool. And we're laughing. I'm like, dude, you're cut off, bro. And I like put a tube on his spinnerbait after that. But it was a good fish. And so that gave me another clue. And so we go in the back, we idle, right before you get on pad again to go into the bayou, I ended up cranking a little bit of this mud wall, and there's another lay down, and I stick a good one, and I was really, stoked. Ooh, this thing's running out in the deep. It was a bowfin. It was my first mud fish. Nice. And so that was pretty cool to see. And Nathan almost grabbed it in the mouth, and I'm like, dude, those things have teeth, dude, watch out. It opened its mouth. He's like, oh, it was pretty funny. But luckily I was able to shake it out and get out of
Ray,
there.
Ray's in the chat, non-boater champion. He had a great tournament down there.
Yeah, he did. Good job, Ray.
I think Bassin with Altitude, I think he's from Wyoming. Fished as a co.
That's cool. Super rad. I love, dude, I love the fact that a lot of these guys are tuned in watching this, because we all got to experience this crazy fishery together. Mm-hmm. After release that bowfin, get up on pad, we run all the way. I actually stop a couple times. I'm like, you know what, I'm just gonna poke around, fish a little bit. Got stuck on a couple stumps, got to get pushed, push off the stump, do the shake, the little shimmy. Trolling motor on 10, try to not blow it off on another stump, and then run up, and we get to the cross, and see Justin up there, the other guy from South Africa, who we befriended because he was right next to us in the boatyard, and really
was in that Crestliner, right?
He was in a Nitro, the Yama Nitro.
Okay, one of the different. The other guy from
Zimbabwe.
Guy from South Africa was in a Crestliner I met in day one.
Gotcha. But yeah, so we get in there and, we'll start looking around, and I think, what was the guy that had he had just an Italian last name on his boat, all black boat with Italian last name.
I saw him up in Darbonne.
I watched him almost smoke a dude. He came around the corner through the cross going 60, fully sliding through the channel. I'm like, oh my gosh. And we're off on the side, and this guy just blasts all the way through. And I'm terrified even idling. And this guy's on full pad going 60, doing the whole thing. holy smokes, this is wild. So I go up a little bit more right as it kind of opens up into the big lake. And I'm square billing around. I'm throwing a spinner bait. Nothing. We go back. Right on the joint of the cross, Nathan throws up with the spinner bait and clears a stump and boom, gets smoked. And I'm like, dude, are you just like going to catch like all these giant fish behind me in practice? And we're able to see it. He shakes it off. And then again, I'm like, okay, if I can get bit a couple more times doing the same deal, you know, I think that will really help. And I ended up getting smoked. Like I had a single willow leaf spinnerbait and the thing just drilled it off of a stump. And I was like, okay, that's two solid bites back here. But I spent literally 3 hours. And I was like, you know what? Like, that's a like last resort that I'm going to come back and do this run. And I saw a lot of boat traffic. And I was like, you know what? Like, I was leaning away from it just mm-hmm. because I knew that it was going to take an hour away from fishing, which I guess now I'm starting to see, like, studying for this next coming season is like an hour run is like whatever. But, like, you know, fishing California, a long run is like 15 minutes, you know, like that's a long run. It's like a 15 minute run. Cause most of our lakes are really low water right now. And that's
yeah. around here outside of the Mississippi River. Yeah. We don't have many big runs either, honestly, but
yeah. So like 5-10 minutes, it's like, you're already there or less, you know? And so, I'm like, you know what? I wasn't feeling it. Go out on the main lake, poked around a little bit, didn't really find anything I was more so trying to eliminate water than to find water. I just wanted to eliminate these long stretches because there's these stretches on the river that they looked amazing. Like anyone who reads a bass book would see a stretch and be like, there's got to be a bass in that stretch. Like it's beautiful laydowns that go straight and like slight bend and like mixed in with some riprap and like it just looks good. And you would think like there's got to be bass on it. Fish it all the way up, fish it all the way back, change it up, different baits, whatnot, flipping it, spinner baits, cranking, nothing. I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad that I was able to eliminate certain long stretches during practice. And then the last day, so the official day of practice, I told myself, okay, I want to eliminate even more water and try and see if I can squeeze into another backwater north. And so I actually ran north to Moon Lake and I got in at Moon. And my goal was if I can squeeze in through one of the side cuts and the side bayous that lead eventually into Horseshoe, I didn't know about the channel cut at like off the main river. There's a small little channel cut in the mud that leads into Horseshoe Lake, literally the size of a bass boat. I had no clue about that. It doesn't show up on Google Earth or anything.
Never
like that.
Been there.
You're like, don't know about it, but ended up like bumping my way in through Moon Lake. And I took, I think it was like the third slew over and Nathan gets a bite. I get a good bite. And like, we get I think 5 or 6 bites back there. And I'm like, hey, this is good. Like found a new little backwater spot. It's super skinny water. My 17, 10 foot boat got stuck a couple times. So guarantee someone with a 21 foot boat's not going to be able to get back here successfully. And so I was like, all right, that's one little zone. So got out of there, fish Horseshoe a little bit, wasn't feeling it in there, left, and ran like literally right across the other side of the river. There's another big lake there. Ran some stuff that looked really good. Again, some stumps and some mud flats and stumps, and just it wasn't happening. So ran back out on the main river, found a couple big key laydowns off the main river, off the bends. Marked some good fish, got a couple small bites, shook them. And so I was kind of, you know, after practice, I was like, all right, well, it's going to be like a cover water deal, but I really wonder what's going to happen when this cold front pushes in. Cause you remember, like it started getting chilly during our last day of practice and things really started to like change. You can feel it in the air. Like when I mean, like when being in nature and just like absorbing all your surroundings, the wind was different, you know, something had changed where like, okay, something's going to come in. And sure enough, day one, you know, and we saw it, we didn't know how bad it was going to be, at least when we were checking the weather. And then it was like, okay, it's raining and it's like in the 40s and wind. It's
beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous weather. Like you wearing shorts, madman.
So did you know that Paul Mueller won there in Moon in 2014?
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I had no clue.
Yeah. So I'm going to just give you a look. Cause I really haven't shared my, like, I mean, I've released my practice video, but I really haven't talked about like my whole adventure, and we'll give you can have a sip of your Yingling and like, But so I was there in 2014, right? Okay. So that was my first national championship. It took me like 15 years to make my first natty, unlike Maddie, who did it in his first try. But
wow,
back then there was no co-anglers, right? So wow. It was like 50 some, and like in the boatyard, John Sukup was next to me.
Wow.
Founder of the Bass Tank. And back then his depth finder was a freaking flipping stick. Like he'd just stick it in the mud. Like he had graphs that were about as new as yours back then.
but newer.
Which was a cool experience. I got to know Paul Mueller. I met Albert Collins at that event. Based on my research back then, everything I was told was Darbone, Darbone, Darbone. And most of the guys that did well in 2011 or 12, Darbone for that national championship. So I literally, in that event, I spent all my practice, all my tournament days, 100% devoted to Darbone.
Wow.
Didn't work out. It was one of those tournaments where I kind of had a few things going and I kind of felt like I was close. I mean, I finished middle of the pack, but like I was within sight of Steve Lund, who made the classic, and other people. And in practice, I think we only had 2 days of practice back then. And the first day of official practice, I made that run, that video you watched that thousands of people have watched.
Yeah. And you like passed a few people on the way up.
Yeah. Like on the way back, when I was just cruising in, I like had a half a second brain fart and smoked the boat in the S turns.
Oh my God.
Put a gouge in my dad's Triton about 6 feet long in the fiberglass.
Oof.
So that got repaired. Another guy took me out. We kind of just took it easy in Darbone that day. And then I think that messed with my head thinking back now. Like I didn't fish as aggressively or run it or push it as I should have
for sure.
With that in my head. Mm-hmm. Anyways, there was some good learnings in that. And my buddy Corey went back in 2015 and who's in my club, made the national championships there. And we bounced ideas off each other back and forth for his tournament. We bounced ideas off for this tournament. And I was still intent to go. And the year that Corey went is when Albert Collins and Jamie Leish and those guys battled it out in Boggy way back. And they were both running 10 boats.
Wow. Boggy's before the
Boggy is like just past Cross, the major first major slough on the left when you get past Cross in Darwin.
Got it.
But you go way back and like so. I was prepared to take my Bass Cat down there. I was going to take the talons off it. I was going to go super light in gear. I was going to take nothing in there like that I didn't need. That was my plan.
Mm-hmm.
But then my buddy Ron, who bought that 18-foot Ranger that I was running, which was a sweet little ride. He made the TBF National Championships 2 years ago and he bought that just for that.
Wow.
And then he has it at home for like a second boat. His main boat is a 22-foot Vexus, and his backup boat is that Ranger.
Gee. Must be nice.
I'll say, if I haven't thanked Ron publicly on the stream or in a video, thank you, Ron. That was awesome. But when he's like that, I was like, because I was already like, in my head, was like, I'm going to, whether it's in Boggy or the Bean Field or wherever, like, my plan is to get back somewhere. Like, I knew there would be a lot of pressure in Darbone, but if you can get back far enough and find the right fish, it can be game over.
For sure.
So I went down there. As you saw in my practice, I drove down early enough on Friday so that I could stop at the spillway and look at it from shore. Because I had been there before from shore from 2014. I knew there was an access there, so it was like easy. I like pulled in and looked at it and marked the water levels on shore and did all that stuff. And so I was like, all right, looks pretty good up here. Looks pretty normal. And there was quite a bit of water that day with the wind blowing. Mm-hmm. And so day one of practice, I did fish a little bit of main river stuff in the morning, some stuff that Corey had kind of talked about, and didn't get any bites. And I was like, all right, it's time to go into Boggy. Like that was like, and I get in and like Boggy, and I actually ran into like several people. Like I think I saw six or seven or eight boats trying to get into Boggy that morning. I was like,
is Boggy, so you come in the Cross, it's the first Cross, and then the second, there's like two paralleling sloughs, right? So the first one's the Cross and the second one's Boggy.
Yeah. So you have to go like cross actually, like there's the power line cut.
Yeah.
And then the next one where there's a left and a right straight from each other, that's cross. And okay, I think it's the next left is.
One
of the next two lefts is boggy.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. So I went back in there and I fished and I spent like 4 or 5 hours in boggy. And I was back there with Chad from Texas and Casey Smith was in there from New York and several other boats. The other guy from South Africa and the Crestliner was back there. And like, I never saw anybody catch fish and I never got a bite.
Hmm.
And I was like,
I'm out.
I was like, all right, let's move up. So then I went up and I went into the chute and didn't get any bites in there and got stuck. I actually spent a lot of time, even though in the aluminum boat, I was getting stuck on stumps and like trying to push pull off them and getting in the water and like pushing the boat off. Like it was like, I'm like exhausted. I'm like 7 hours in, I haven't a bite. I'm in the chute. I see the guy from freaking Louisiana in this little tiny like express that's like 16 or 17 foot express, like Dave Cavell. And he's like back there super. All of a sudden I see him get on plane. He's like, and I was like, I just got stuck there. And the guy just blew through that. Like I was literally like pushing through like inches of mud on stump. And I just watched him run through there. And I was like,
he's like, meow.
I was like,
later. Like, as well. Did you see any snakes or any?
No, I did in pre-practice the first time I was down there, but I think things had just gotten cool enough. Like if you would have went there before off limits, like in September, you would have saw them.
Yeah, I think it was like too cold for them, huh?
Yeah. So like, and I go in there and it's still nothing. I'm looking for this other area where I got a bunch of bites like last day of the term, and I never figured out where that was. Or if it maybe just silted in. And then I go into this other area where I had gotten bites and Corey actually did pretty well in there in his tournament. Mm-hmm. And I catch one on a spinnerbait at like 4 o'clock, 3:45 in the afternoon is my first bite on day one. It's like a 2-pounder. And I'm like, man, it feels good to get it. And I was like all gung ho. Like I had covered all my spinnerbait hooks with like shrink tubing.
Yeah,
because I didn't want to catch him. I just wanted to shake him.
Yeah,
and like by that point,
swung super hard on that fish.
No, I had broken one of my good spinner baits, like from banging off stumps, and I put on one that I had a spinner bait made up that I was really excited about, and so I just put on a junky one and I caught one. And I fished hard in there, and I pulled on one on a bladed jig that I had covered up, and I was like, "All right, well this is promising. Like this is a place that like was good in 2014. It was good in 2015. Yep. Got two bites in there." All right, little something. And then I caught like a drum that night and maybe had one or two other bites in the bayou, like in the main channel.
Okay.
Day two, I decided to go launch at the spillway. And I launched at the spillway. A guy from New Jersey launched up there. And so I couldn't fish the spillway proper, but I kind of ran. There's like a 1.5-2 mile stretch straight south of there.
Yeah.
And I just started fishing down that and caught like a squeaker on a square bill. So I switched to the spinner bait and then I had like four of them roll. And then actually right before I caught that squeaker, I had a good one follow it square bill. I was like, well, it looked like a bass. And then I like rolled like four in the next like 100 yards on a spinner bait. Like where they come up and grab it and you just kind of pull on them with the hook covered and you'd see them. And it was like, I was like, all right, I jumped across.
Yeah.
Picked up a different square bill and rolled it by this like tree that was a little stuck out. You know, they make little points and catch like a 2.5-pounder. And I was like,
nice.
And I see another boat coming. So I pick up a buzzbait. So a buzzbait for like 200 yards and never get a bite. And I know I fished over fish. And I was like, all right, we can write off the buzzbait on that. And then I picked up a spinnerbait on like the very next good lay down and like, donk. And I was like, went up to the spillway. Fished the spillway after they left, didn't get any bites, and put on a trailer. And I was like, all right, like I can fish up here. Like, and like, sure. I know, like, so from that point on, I was like, I can make the run to the spillway.
Yeah.
And if you can get on it first and they're there, you hit a home run. Like, you will catch 14 to 18 pounds if you can get on the spillway when they're biting. And then, but I know, it's like, I got this stretch below where I feel like I can grind out 8 to 12 pounds. If that doesn't work or somebody
needs to do a little backup plan. Yeah.
Right. So I went down to Holland's Bluff, which is probably further than you ever even made it. And
south.
It was a ramp. in Darbonne.
Oh yeah, no, yeah,
didn't yeah. You probably never even made it up that far. But I went down there, and then I like, drove back up to the spillway to make sure I knew how to get there, and it was still like navigable.
Yeah,
and like relearned it.
Yeah.
And then I fished a few things in the main bayou, got a few bites that day, and I was like, oh, day two practice was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Day three, I decided I was going to check the main river.
Mm-hmm.
And like my second stop, like I pull up and a little outside bend with some wood on it. And like, I'm like, sure, Cheetah, you can go ahead. You know, I've never fished here before. Let's, you know, maybe set the hook on one. And like literally his third pitch, he jacks like an almost 4-pounder, just like, and I was like, what?
What are you
like,
that's doing?
Like the biggest fish I've ever seen caught on the Ouachita River. Like, like maybe since the pre-practice, my dad maybe.
You're like, Cheetah, what did like, you do? He's like, you just told me.
Yeah. And actually we ran, like we spent like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours fishing like main river. And we went in one little lake. And we probably got like 4 or 5 bites.
And I was in the lake?
In the river. No.
In the river. Okay.
In the river. Yeah. Like basically like from the ramp up to like 2 bends, there's a lake on the left.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like maybe it's a couple more bends, but there's like a couple hard bends. I think it's like the first lake on the left almost. Not the one that's right away, but like there's one where you can actually get in.
There's a
big sand flat on your right as you make, like there's a lake on like a backwater on your right, and there's a big sand.
Is this after or before Darbonne exit?
After, like couple turns past.
Oh yeah, there's one on the left, and it's skinny to get into it, and then there's like a big line of cypress inside, right, and then it opens up to a bigger lake, but it's
Anyway, so we fished up to like there, which is maybe like 5 miles, maybe not even like 4 miles up, maybe, and like we had like just running real quick. We had like 4 or 5 bites, and I was like,
yeah.
I was like, well, this could be an escape route, because that was one of my things in 2014. I never practiced outside of the Darbonne, so like, I had no out. So my plan was like, I'm gonna run up there, and if I come back early enough, I could still run up and down the river, and maybe get a few bites. So I could, like, if I can go get some quality fish, even if I don't catch a limit, I can come out to the river and catch a couple, But then I did have that sneaking suspicion that we did have a couple of good, like, quality fish. And I was like, maybe I should just fish the main river. Nah. So, but
holy fools, getting up to the main river.
Getting up to the spillway was actually pretty challenging, even in my boat. So I didn't think that many people would go up there.
Yeah, that's a daunting.
And then when I had boat draw 6, I thought I could beat people up there. If I could, if none of the, like, if I could get to the no wake first.
Yeah,
I could beat people there.
Yeah, because like once you're in the bayou, like you got to lead the pack. It's not like someone's gonna try and pass you in the bayou.
There are
a
few places, but yeah, not a lot. In that first stretch, right after the first no wake, there's some room.
Yeah,
once you get past cross, it's pretty tough to pass somebody if they don't want you to pass them.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Yeah, I couldn't even fathom. You know, after. Yeah, that's wild, dude. Huh. It's interesting to hear.
I pre-practiced in 2014. I fished we had 3 tournament days plus the practice. Like there was no cut. And then my first 2 days plus the afternoon, like we actually got bites in like the main river, the Darbonne too, in the afternoon. I spent a lot of time going back into cross and in the bean field with Cheetah. And then we went out back in the middle and we got a couple bites quick. Like I actually got a lot of bites on day 3.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. So like literally of like the 15 days I've been on that river, I spent 14 and a half of them in Darbonne.
Wow. That's crazy.
So when you're like, up by Moon, I was like, I've never been there. Like I have all these tracks saved and like they literally go from Forsyth and the Darbonne. They like, there's all this river. I've never even looked at. Yeah, so that's practice. We both felt reasonably good. We had some stuff to go on out of practice. I was boat 6. What was your boat?
I was boat 12.
Boat 12.
Yeah.
So you actually weren't that far away from me.
Yeah.
So Yeah, you probably had like how many fish do you think you had in the boat by the time I got to the spillway at like 9 o'clock or 8:30?
I didn't have my dude. How's this?
How many did your co have? How about that,
dude? This is the fun part. This is the fun part about bass fishing, right? Talking about like how things can change within an hour, and how like perseverance and how like mental strength and aptitude like comes into play is like such a huge like facet of the sport of bass fishing. My co stuck a 3-pounder. I pull up, flip into the tree, spinnerbait out, nothing. Second cast, like, you know, pick apart the tree first. He throws up there, boom, like 3-pounder, flips it in. I'm like,
was he throwing a spinnerbait too?
Yeah. And so his guy, his name's Mark Edmonds from Alabama.
Okay.
Sweetest guy ever. And he actually, so he's like, hey, do you mind if Brian rides along with us? And I was like, wait, like what? Like, who, what are you talking about? And he pulls out this paper and this is like, I had heard about Brian. I didn't know like what the whole story was. Mm-hmm. And it was the article about like the plane crash. And then on the other side was a photo of Mark and Brian. And he's like, he's my good luck charm, man. Like, do you mind if he rides with us? I was like, he could ride shotgun, dude. Like, you know, I could, he's more than welcome. And so, yeah, you know,
so for people that don't know, we're talking about Brian Kirchhoff.
Yeah, Kirchhoff.
Who's the only angler to ever win the Bassmaster Classic out of the Bass Nation. And I forget what year it was, but he basically, his first year we made it, he finished dead last in the Classic. He came back the next year and won the Classic.
That's wild.
And then, like, a couple months after that, he was doing, like, sponsor trips, speaking engagements, and the plane crashed.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic.
So there's a whole lot more to it. We could go into it, but I just wanted to give people, like, that's the
gist.
Now, like, literally months after he won the Classic, he passed away in a plane crash.
Yeah, it's crazy. So Mark had stuck that first fish. It was a good one on a spinnerbait.
So where did you, like, you started just north? Where did you
go? I started actually the opening of Darbone.
Okay.
Because I knew that we had a good bite there in practice. I'm like, you know what? Like, I know that there's going to be a lot of boat traffic rolling into Darbone, but I'm pretty sure not a lot of guys are going to want to fish that stretch just because of the amount of boat traffic. So I was like, I'm going to pull up there. I pull up in there. Zach from Arizona pulls up right behind me. He was like, good luck, California. And I'm like, thanks, dude. And he's like, he like idles ahead and then puts his trolling motor down. And I'm just like, wait, what? I'm like, what? And he like turns around and he starts heading towards me. And so we're going towards each other, like heading towards each other. I get to the trees first because I'm, you know, closest to him. And he gave me some space. And he's like, yeah, man, like, I'm sorry I had to do that to you. Like, you know, I found fish here at practice too. I'm like, dude, it's all good, bro. Like, good luck. You know, we both didn't catch him there. And so we got out. I left. I started heading north, just bouncing main lake stuff or main river stuff. And there's a tree that I had saw in practice and I didn't hit it, but it looked good. And so I stop in at the tree and yeah, Mark sticks that good one out of there. And I'm like, dang, I stick a short, you know, I actually stick 2 shorts off the crank, like right away. It was a clue, you know, I actually tied on a bluegill. I'll give you guys the juice. I tied on a bluegill balsa crank. I don't know the name of it, but it's a bluegill balsa crank. After I had saw some bluegill up in a cypress needle on the last day of practice. I noticed that there was these bluegill that were like 2.5 inches long, and they were pale. They almost looked like crappie. And so that was a little clue for me. I was like, okay, all the fish that I'd felt, which were just a couple, they all had their teeth were really, really sharp. I figured that they were probably not chewing up on craws. I knew that, you know, like if their teeth are this sharp, they're probably eating fin bait. I mean, the amount of shad that were off the main river was pretty predominant. And then after I saw those bluegill, I was thinking, I'm like, you know what? if a bass were to eat one bluegill, it'd be the equivalent of a bass eating like 10 or 15 shad just to get the same amount of like protein, basically. And same thing with like one crawfish, they have to eat like a whole much more shad just to get the same amount of protein. So I'm like, these fish might be keyed in on bluegill. Why not? So pick that thing up, boom, 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 two bites right away, like on a main lake bend, on the main river bend. And I'm like, they're shorts. Maybe just the little ones are chasing them. And just kind of like backseated the thought, put it down, kept with a spinnerbait, kept with flipping. He pulls up on a tree, boom, he sticks a 2-pounder out of the tree. And I'm like, oh my gosh. On a flipping, he's flipping right. A jig.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow, okay. Well, I'm like, I was stoked for him because, you know, Mark, he'd said, I'd fished Bass Nation for 30 years, and this is my first time making it to the national championship. And I was like, dang, dude, that's inspirational, you know, like that. And I was so pumped for him. He shared me like this whole story on like, you know, that during the regionals on how he just squeaked in by like 3 ounces. And it was a really emotional moment for him. It was really cool. And so I was stoked for him that he caught those two fish. I made an adjustment. I spliced on some fluoro. And I pick up a flipping jig that I had gotten a couple bites in practice, and I flip it into the same tree before leaving. I flip into the tree and I literally get a bird's nest, and I'm like pulling out the bird's nest and I get it all the way out and let it out. And as soon as I feel the weight, I'm like, oh, that's more than a jig. And I set it and it was a 2-pounder. I was like, all right.
Which is a monster.
I was like, I did it blank.
Yeah,
I just want to walk across the stage once. I did a blank, stoked,
and you're like, "This is a better than average fish on the river." Like,
yeah, and yeah, I was
a 2-pounder is a good one. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. A 2-pounder was a good fish.
Yeah, it was a good fish. So I was pumped, you know. So he had 3 at this point. He caught another one out of the tree, and so he had 3 fish. I had 1. I go up a little bit more ahead. I catch a fish on a spinnerbait, a little small one. It was like maybe a pound and a quarter or something. And I kept running the same pattern. You know, we were flipping, bounce over to the other side, flip like main lake or main river. I keep saying lake, main river bends, laydowns that weren't too crowded with other laydowns, just trying to find the stuff that looked a little bit more awkward, like trying to find the stuff that like, if guys were going to stop there, it was going to be at the end of their run, and they wouldn't like start there and go, if that makes sense. I had a feeling that most guys were going to start on these stretches that look money, like, oh my gosh, like there's 5 trees right in a row and this looks amazing. And then it ends on riprap or something like that. Like I was going to start at the riprap and then go further where there's like maybe 2 stumps and then 1 little lay down and that's it. And so that I started keying in, I was like, maybe this is it. Maybe it's not. 1:30, I have 2 fish in the boat. Mark has 3. I watch him dump a 3-pounder. Like he gets wrapped up on a stick. He gets it out of the water and fish comes up. Jig goes. Fish jumps back in the water. And I'm like, dang, dude. Like, bloop.
Yeah, I'm fishing this rip tomorrow for sure.
I was like, I'm coming here tomorrow. Thank you. And then fish the whole section like nothing. And so I'm like, okay, we got to start heading back. It's, you know, 1:30. I look down. I'm like, I need to change something up because at this point I'd started to become a little bit robotic with a spinnerbait and a flipping jig. And whenever I get into that mode in fishing, whether it's fun fishing or if it's during a tournament, I know that I have to change something because I'm not staying engaged enough where I know I'm going to get bit. Like as soon as you start getting to like the monotonous, like, and you're not actively thinking like, okay, what's going on? Like, why are these, are they setting up here? Are they not setting up here for this reason and whatnot? I was like, I need to change something up because I'm not getting bit. And 2, neither is Mark. And he was getting, you know, bites on this earlier. Maybe something's changed. I look down, I see the square bill. I pick the square bill again. It was like maybe my third or fourth cast. I literally am about to put it away and my boat drifts around this little corner. And I'm like, I'm literally like, you'll see it in the video. I'm like literally trying to hang up my square bill on my reel. And I'm like, no, this looks really good. Fire over to it, get 3 cranks. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a good fish. I had to like double check. I was like, I forgot what a fish felt like, you know? swinging in the boat, 2.5 pounder, almost a 3. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, this is something else. Like, that's when I told him, I'm like, all right, dude, we're about to bounce. Like, we're gonna move. We're gonna cover water. We're gonna bounce. And he's like, all right, man. And he was always on it. He was ready to go. Boom, jacket, like, we're out.
And, very positive dude. Like, he's like,
dude, so
best positive. Best outside of catching those good fish behind you, but like attitude wise, best co-angler you could draw.
100%. I can't agree anymore. Such a good dude. And so I was like pulling for him out of the back of the boat too. I was like, come on, Mark, you got this, bud. Just 2 more fish. And so I got that third fish at 130, and I was like, okay, I need to make something happen. And it's going to be with the square bill. So I, after analyzing where I got bit, I ran new water. I stopped in on this one.
You went back down, but fished new stuff on the way down.
Yep. Ran new water heading back down to the ramp, and I pull off on the left-hand side versus the right, where the right looks the textbook good stuff. The left was sparse and kind of weird, but still had some cover, but wasn't like it didn't scream like, come and fish me. But when I saw it, I was like, ooh, I'm stopping here. Like, something was pulling me towards it. And I pull in, third cast, just shy of 4. It was like a 3.5. I was like, oh my gosh, big one, get it in. I'm like,
Did you boat flip it?
Yeah, I boat flipped all of them.
Wow, you're so savage.
Dude, I got like brand new hooks every single morning, dude. And so I flipped that. And he's like, dude, that's a good one. I'm like, yeah, it's my biggest fish I've caught this whole, like, since I've been on this river. And I went from, you know, having 2 fish at 130 to now having 4 fish, and it's 215.
And, like, honestly, 4 fish, the 4 fish you have with that big one, like,
yeah,
you're in the, even if you didn't catch any more, like, you'd, like, obviously you wanted more, but, like,
yeah, I was happy. One, I was like, oh, like, my gosh.
Like, even if you didn't get your 5th one, you're like, I mean, I'm in it.
Top 20. In my head, I was like, dude, I'm like sitting top 20 right now just with the 4 fish. Like, I'm pumped at this point. I'm pumped. But I'm like, you know what? Nope, not done yet. We got to keep going. Boom, bounce another spot. Run it. Nothing. Bounce another spot. Run it. There was a spot that I saw on the way back. Actually, when I was blasting off. And I had dropped a mental waypoint on it. And we pull up into it. And I think it was like my second cast. And mind you now, it's like 2:45. And I stick another one that was, you know, just shy of 3, flipping in the boat. And I start freaking out. I'm like, I can't believe it. And then a couple casts later, I catch another one, and I ended up culling. And he's like, dude, you got a good bag. And I'm like, I've caught in fish late in the day, but I've never made a move from having 2 fish at 1:30 to, and literally having an hour and some change left. It's true, man. Surfing and fishing have a lot of similarities, but like, you know, that was such a huge like confidence boost for me. And I was also thinking too, I was like, you know what, there might be a lunar connection with this as well, but I didn't want to. I was like, okay, well, the second bite window turns on at 1:30, like 1:30, 1:45, and you have to fish hard for the last hour and so, because there's another prime bite window. Just from what I saw, just the fact that I had seen some like better than average fish being caught in that last like bit, and that was enough for me to like click that in. Okay. So for the next day, I ended up weighing 12 something, sat in 7th place day one. Stoked, beyond stoked, humbled, and beyond stoked. Two? And 12-2 day one.
I was 12-3. You were 1 ounce behind me.
Yeah, I was pumped because, you know, and it's funny, I was right behind Kobe in line. And I thought, I'm like, dude, Mark's like, dude, you sacked him, man. I'm like, thank you, dude. I'm stoked. I'd be happy with a top 20. You know, like, everyone here is freaking hammers. And that's, and like, regardless of like what happened this, you know, that week ago, everyone that made it to the Nationals are freaking studs. And so I was like, I'm pumped. If I can make top 20 against these dudes, like, I'm freaking stoked. Like, here, Kobe goes up 19 pounds.
You're like,
I'm just going to go. I'm gonna head out, guys.
Yeah, no joke. I was like by my boat, and where I was close enough to hear the stage pretty good. And I was like, did I just hear what I thought I heard? Like, are you kidding me?
I was blown away.
Yeah, so great day one. Yeah, so my day one, I think most of you saw the video. If you're not, you can check it out. Like, so I made the run to the spillway. I was boat six. A couple boats passed me because I was only going 46 miles an hour. Beat me to Darbone cutoff.
Wow.
I passed David Cavell in his tin boat. So there was that. But I passed a couple guys in the lower bayou that would like slow down going to the S turns. I passed like two boats. Nice. Passed another tin boat up by Holland's Bluff. So I was like, man, I don't. Like, I had the sneaking. It's like, I know, because I watched Kobe was one of the guys that passed me. And I fished next to Kobe in practice in 2014 up at the spillway. Mm-hmm. He made it to the Classic largely because of that. He finished second in 2014. I was like, he's up there. Yeah. I know he's ahead of me. And so we're whining. And my guy, my TJ Dobbs is with me. And he's like, I think you're in front. I was like, no, you wait. We'll get around this corner up here. Like, so I mean, like, but it's an hour and 20 minutes of like,
that's such a
like hard. I mean, like, the most mentally taxing part of my day was the drive up there and back each day. Like, because it is just like,
without
an hour, like, of the hour and 20 minute run, an hour, I don't know, almost an hour of it is like, 100% concentration, like
driving around stumps,
like looking at your graph. Okay, this is the shallow spot. You got to shut down. You got to idle over this, and like weaving between. It's like, did I go the left of this lane? Did I go the right of this tree when I went? I mean, it, like, I didn't record it like I did last time, but it was like nuts. Like, I remember like TJ was like holding on to the side of the boat, so he wouldn't like when we go into a turn, he wouldn't slide across the bench and land up in my lap. I mean, because we were like. I mean, like internet, right? Like,
should have had him on the bow with like a helmet on, like one of those Aussie like Timbo.
And it was raining; it was like hard to see, and like dark enough where I didn't want my sunglasses. And and so we get up there, and he's like, "Oh man, I think we're." And they're like, "No, you are. We're gonna get up around the spillway." And there is, and Kobe is right on the spillway, and you should see it in my video. He's like right in this spot. Fish behind him. I had a little fish on, and then we pull back down to the stretch, and like right away. TJ misses a fish, like swims like 10 feet with his bait and like he misses it. And I was like, oh, and then I fished down quite a ways and I finally catch a dink, like just a line burn, like a 12 and a half inch, like probably doesn't weigh a pound on a spinnerbait. It's like, all right. But same thing is like, you catch your first fish on the watch. You're like, I'm going across the stage. Like that is a thing. Like
I'm weighing a fish.
Cause zero is a real possibility out there. No matter what you think you're on.
Oh yeah.
And then like shortly after that, I dump one. Because somehow on my spinnerbait, the drag got loose, like from vibration or something. And like I bowed up on it, my line just, and like he just opened his mouth. And I was like, and I saw him, I was like, that was like a 2.5, like at least. I was like,
that was one on the left hand side, right? I think I saw the video. Yeah.
And I was just like devastated. I was like, that, I was like, just like, Rich, you can't have it. Like, you can't have that.
Do that, Rich.
That's just, you're not going to win doing that. Like, so I meet up against Chad and then I jump across and I fish up because I wanted to fish up because I know nobody had fished that and I wanted some clean water. Because the thing that shocked me is like, all right, there's like four or five boats up here this morning. I was like,
gee,
I wasn't shocked.
Taylor was, Kobe up, there,
was
right?
up there, but there was like four other boats. And I was like, man, there's a lot of people up here.
Yeah. Taylor was up there, right?
Yeah. Taylor,
Smith.
Swift. And Chad from Texas. And I think there was one other boat besides Kobe and I. And so like I was like, I swung back and if you saw in the video, I got hung up, which put me really tight to the bank. But there was these two like trees that stood up for there and I ended up casting parallel behind them and got smoked. And I was like, I was like, well, that's a freaking good one.
Yeah.
And because I'm not cool like Maddie, I didn't boat flip. I just just went down and grabbed them.
I see you guys scooping them. I'm like, dude, why are you scooping that fish, bro? Get that thing in the boat.
Yeah, I just didn't want anything to go bad.
Yeah.
But and I was like, dude, all right. Like now I'm like jacked again, right? Because like that's the biggest fish I've literally caught all week.
Yeah.
And then I hop back across, fish down, and I catch keeper, and then I literally like throw back in the same spot, and a fish smokes it again, and I catch like a 2.5, 2.75 on the spinnerbait where I had lost that one. I was like, all right, erased. We're back to square. Like I've eradicated that. Like mentally, that was like huge. I was like,
yeah,
we got four fish. Yeah. I got two good ones, two dinks, like one okay one and like a super dink. And I was like,
yeah,
all right, okay, we can do this. Now it's like, okay, I got tons of time. I get one, maybe two more bites. I got a really good bag, right? And so fish around, hopscotch on their boats, and I jump down a ways and I get on a stretch and I catch one, get number five. Mm-hmm. I think my co-catch is one right after that. And I'm like, it's 11:30. I got a good bag. I was like, yeah. I want to start like heading south. I'll fish stuff as I go down.
Yeah.
I run into Kobe and he only had two fish like at 11:30 as we were heading back down. Now they were
day one.
Pretty sure they were two good ones, but he only had
two. He's like 2 5-pounders, but I mean,
so he did not catch them at the spillway. He caught two fish up where I was. Like, Taylor didn't have him that good the first day. I want to say he had 8 or 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Not that it was bad, but like literally in the upper stretch, I had, I think, the best bag that day. Obviously, Kobe caught some more on his way back down and caught 19 pounds. and then I ran and I started to see all the people that were just south of me, like Jim Barzek and the guy with the Italian name on the side of his boat and Brock B, like from South Dakota, and like so many people. And I was like, man.
Yeah.
But I fished some stuff and I caught an upgrade that got rid of that 12 incher with like a 2+ pounder. And I was like, I was pretty jacked and like went back to like my secret like spot where the day where I had my bites and didn't get any bites in there. And like, I was like, all right, I have this spot that Corey told me about south of town where he caught like a 5-pounder main river, like some stumps. And I was like, you got a good bag. It's time to go down there. So I left with plenty of time to get down there and fish that and then maybe fish my way back up. So I get past the ramp. I get to the ramp and I notice like I go from like line moving at E to like now it's not moving on E anymore.
It's like buried.
It's buried. And I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, and I kind of keep pushing it. And I'm like, well, it's early enough. Somebody could probably pick me up. But it's like, you got 12 pounds or whatever. Yeah, you got a good bag. What are you doing? And then I finally just like turned into the bank and just started fishing random stuff up. But so I like really. That last hour and a half was really inefficient for me. And I kind of regret that. Like if I'd better known my gas situation, like if I was more familiar with that boat, I probably would have done it differently. Maybe could have gotten a little more like, you know, I probably would have turned up and probably fished where you were fishing more instead of trying to go south of town. And maybe I catch a 2-pounder or, you know, a 3-pounder and like, get up to like 13 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm a little frustrated with that, but like stoked, right? Because I got to weigh in like sixth, right? So at that point, 12 pounds was like, I think the leading bag when I weighed in was like 8-something.
Yeah, you crushed that out of the
park. So I go like, they're okay, we need 8 pounds, 11 ounces to take the lead, and it's like 12 pounds. It's like,
ooh, you're like,
yeah, like. Yeah, I'm like big bass is 210. Oh, you got a 312. Like I was like felt good. Like yeah, this is awesome. Yeah.
That was wild.
But so yeah, great start for both of us on day one.
Definitely. Yeah, day two was a trip. So I
ended up drawing reservations about day two, knowing how many people were up there. Like I was already starting to think like there's a lot of people up there. But I was hoping the guys that like Taylor and Chad and these other guys that only caught like 5 to 7 pounds would bail.
Yeah.
But they didn't. And another guy went up there.
Huh. I think the what it probably was everyone was like, okay, well, if Kobe ran back, guarantee, and sack 19, like.
Well, the thing is, I don't think most people realize like Kobe didn't catch them all up there. He caught them further down.
But then we're going back to like the mental game about this whole thing. Yeah. It's like mentally they knew that if he ran back there,
they're like, well, if I catch 19 pounds, I'm back in this thing.
Exactly. And so it's like, I don't like, for me, it's funny. Cause when I saw your bag, his bag, I was like, okay, those are two like solid bags back there. But then when I saw Taylor weigh, and then you know, I was like, okay, because I knew that he was going to make that run too. You know, I kind of had a feeling, you know, that he was going to go back in Narbonne. And I fished a California, it was the California Open on Clear Lake this past year as a co. Mm-hmm. And I ended up catching a check there. And in that event, we ended up fishing backwater instead of main lake stuff. I practiced main lake with my buddy and figured out a bite on the main lake. And then I had one rod, or I brought a flip rod and a frog rod just in case, left it in my truck. And I had one reel that had braid on it. Everything else was floral, like getting all ready for it. Yeah, John, everyone hit that thumbs up. And my boater calls me up and I'm like, yo, dude, what are we doing tomorrow? He's like, flipping and frogging. And I was like, wait, what? I wasn't ready for that at all. But I was like, hey, those are two of my strengths, man. I love flipping and frogging. Let's do this. And I asked my buddy, my other buddy, Dominic. I'm like, hey, dude, he like luckily works at Tackle Warehouse. and he goes, I'm like, yo, you got any extra braid? He's like, dude, I got like one spool of 65, bro. Like, you're lucky. And I'm like, whoo. Like, so I have two rods of braid. We go back there and we go to town. We ended up sacking like 20 pounds day one. And there was four other boats back there. And day two, I ran to a different backwater in a different part of the lake. And the guys that ran back to that other place, yeah, exactly. I drew Crutcher on the last day. That's cool that you saw that, which is, again, on the YouTubes. You guys can go back and check it out. Learned a lot from Mark, and that was really cool. Yeah, he's legit. He's a good dude. Hammer. I learned that, you know, fish in backwaters, yeah, they'll be back there. One, two, you can nail them, hammer them if you can get in there on the day one of an event. But three-day events usually aren't won backwaters because, one, they just don't reload. And two, those fish become just pressured just by the amount of boat traffic. And especially if guys do good in the day one, dock talk gets out a lot faster and a lot more than a lot of people think. And all it takes is just one little whisper and then 50 boats know about it. And so my guy that I drew day one, he went back in that same area and he ended up getting like only 17 pounds day two and fell down a little bit. I think we squeaked out another like 19 pound bag out of a different backwater, but the same thing had happened. My buddy who had went day one in that backwater ended up stroking him, and day two, everyone's weights fell. And so going into this event, I knew that yes, if I had found a backwater, it would be good for one day. But I didn't think it was going to be one of the spots that I thought would reload throughout a day or even overnight. And so I guess going into day two, I had confidence because I knew that you guys were all going to go run back up there. And after I saw the weights that from the guys were up there, I was like, okay, well, let's just hope to God that Kobe doesn't sack another 20 pounds and put this thing away. But
well, at the same time, you're like, well, if Kobe catches them, right? But if I still catch 12 pounds, right? Like,
yeah,
second was 15, and then like everybody, like it was tight, right?
It felt, so
like,
yeah,
you're like, off, if I can 12 pound him to death, yeah, I got a really good shot of being second or third, right? Like, even yeah, if he catches him again,
exactly. And Kobe, so he was right next to me in the boatyard. So I was talking to him. He's like, yeah, I've been to the championship seven times. You know, I'm like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, I've been to the classic twice. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, dude, you're a freaking hammer, bro. You're gonna like lay waste to everyone here. And he just like kind of chuckles. And I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna get smoked right now. And yeah, so you know, my non-boater that I drew, Dustin, I forgot where he's from. Another really good dude. We're the same age, and so it was great. We were like
not Dustin Drath. Did you? Not Wisconsin.
Yeah, he ended up fishing last day with us.
Dustin Drath from Wisconsin. He was my co day three at La Crosse.
Okay, so he stuck 12 pounds from the back of the boat with the South African Justin day one, and I was like, dude, you're gonna like stick all these fish, bro. Like. I was like, all right. So my goal was, you know what? There's going to be release fish. I'm going to stay close at first. Just get out like going. And I'm going to just try to, my goal was to get, if I can get three fish in really quick, because I knew that this cloud cover that we had was going to clear up.
Yeah.
And so I put down, like, I was still in the idle zone heading north, and I pull my trolling motor and I start fishing. One of the guys from Ohio, he had put down a little bit earlier, and I was like, hey man, like, I was going to start a little bit further up. Like, you cool with that? He's like, dude, you're in a way better position than me, dude, do it.
Nick Leonard, good yeah, dude.
Such a good dude. And so I gave him some space. I put down, started with the spinnerbait, and it was like,
it's a good looking stretch right there for sure.
Oh dude, it looks money. You know, like, it's a perfect bend. There's like rock and that lay down, stick one off of that. A couple casts later, boom, stick another one. Crankbait, boom, stick one on the crank. And they're all like nothing big. Everything was like a pound and a half, but it was like confidence, you know. I just got three fish by 9 o'clock. Like, this is crazy. You know, so I had this huge weight lifted off my shoulders, and I was like, wow, now I can like really fish with a clear head. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to bounce that same stuff. That one spot that I stuck, that one that was just shy of four, I'm like, I'm going to stop on that same stretch, but I'm going to pick it apart a little bit more. And so I pull in on this one tree, spinnerbait, nothing. Dustin flips out behind the boat, sinks it out a little bit, slow rolls it right behind at the tip of the tree, boom, sticks like a 3-pounder, freaking flips it in the boat. I'm just like, what? Are you serious? Like, oh. It was like Mark Edmonds all over again. Go to the next tree, flip in there. Spinnerbait, flip a jig, nothing. He throws in there again, boom, sticks another one, 2.5 pounds. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, hey, dude, I'm pumped for you. You're still in this. Like, guarantee majority of the non-boaters don't have nearly the weight that you have. Like, dude, you're fine.
Except for Ray.
yeah, except for Ray. Because Ray's a hammer. And so we start... Start bouncing some main river stuff. I stick another one on a crank. So I got four fish. I'm feeling good. And I pull around to that stretch where day one, Mark dumps the three. And there was something about that stretch too, where just like, it felt right. It was deeper water, closer to a bend, and some good sparse laydowns. Start flipping around. And I changed the jig trailer up a couple times. Like, I go from like a really flappy, like, June bug trailer on a brown jig to like a green pumpkin trailer. And then I go back to this June bug trailer, and I see a little stump that has a decent root ball on it. And it was kind of like by itself a little bit. And I flip up there, and the way that the fish were eating it, they weren't hammering it. It was weird because in practice, when you flip in, they'd boom, you'd smoke there. They got it. Or, you know, you really feel it. But on tournament day, especially even day one, when they'd eat it, they would just pick it up. They wouldn't like hammer it and swim off. They'd just pick it up and hold it. And so after figuring that kind of deal out day one, when day two rolled around, I flipped in there. I was swinging on everything. I probably shot the jig over my head like 5 or 6 times. And I flipped the jig in there. I felt the gum and I just set into it. And as soon as I set into it, I felt the thing surge. I watched a boil under the stump, and I'm like, that's her. And then she comes out of the stump, and I made sure to see like how good she had the jig. She had it good, and I flipped her in the boat. And Dustin goes like, bro, that's a 5-pounder. And I'm like, throw it in the live well room and check it. I start fishing again. And then like 5 minutes later, I'm like, okay, I need to check. And so I take out the scale, I hold it up. It's like a 3.75. And so we were big iron fish because, you know, catching a bunch of 1-pounders, you're like, you catch a 3 and you think it's a giant. But so that's when Dustin goes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they would just, and then just sit. They wouldn't like, wow, that's rad, man. That's really cool. I threw a Senko around. I didn't throw a weightless. Actually, I did throw a weightless, but I threw a 4-inch. I didn't throw a big size. I just felt like I had to just cover water. Being at the front of the boat. And so I stuck that fish. He's like, dude, you're fishing tomorrow, bro.
I don't know what golf means, but sure.
Yeah. I like to fish. And so that's when I kind of like relaxed me a bit. I knew that I had about 9 pounds for that limit. I had a couple squeakers, you know, and so it was about 12:30. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna start working my way back down. I just want to bounce some of these spots that I had hit them the day before. And sure enough, roll into that same little stretch that I had caught that first like aha moment crankfish, stick another one that was like a 2.5, get it in the boat, call out one of the small ones, run all the way back. It's 230, 240 at this time, run back to that same little like rip wrap stretch. Sure enough, start working down that with the square bill again, boom, stick another one, 2.5, get it in the boat, call out the other one. So I was like, all right, cool. Like that's, I'm stoked.
10 pounds.
I thought it was, yeah, I was like, okay, that's at least 10 pounds. Like pumped, dude.
You're a
like,
big guy. I mean, you thought you had 12 again.
I was like, oh, I don't know. That's a limit. Only a couple of them look fat, but they kept shrinking. Yeah, no, it was. It was definitely racing because I that was like really the first time I'd ever culled out two times, like back to back days in a multi day tournament format in the last 10 minutes. That was neat. And so when I go and weigh in, they're like, dude, like what was like 11.6 or something like that. They're like, big bag of the day. And I'm like, wait, how much did Kobe have? They're like, he had 4 pounds. I was like, oh. I was like, oh my gosh. And I had seen him running down when I was far up north. I seen him running down. And I was like, I looked at him like, what? You get him? He just like looked at me and just looked straight and just like stayed on pad. I was just like, oh man, I wonder.
Yeah, because he ran up to the spillway. He started at the spillway.
Dude, he said he ran over 3.5 hours day two.
Yeah, he ran all the way to the spillway. But a guy from Utah who was like boat 48 the first day decided to use his boat try to go up there. I don't know if he'd ever been up there because he smoked his prop 5 times trying to get up there. His boat sounded really rough when he was coming back down. But he got to the spillway and caught some fish on the spillways.
Wow.
He was the guy that came up there that wasn't up there the day before. He's the only one that really caught any fish. Taylor caught a small limit up there.
Yeah.
Those were the two first guys up there. But everybody else, I don't know if anybody else even got a bite up there. Oh, my co caught one. Uh-huh. But it was rough. Like it was a ghost town. I mean, you saw that in my practice video. Like I broke out the Nico rig. I broke out the baby brush hog. Like I just, I don't know, didn't go, you know, and I salvaged one fish and I missed one other good bite. I went back in that one hole where I got my fish in practice and I fished hard in there and I missed one really good bite that doubled over my rod, but I didn't get a hook in him.
Yeah.
I don't know if you just had the plastic or the weight, but like, I mean, in the end, that wouldn't have mattered. It would have put me a lot closer going into date. But yeah, that was, and then obviously I fished that spot to the bitter end. Mm-hmm. Because I knew I didn't have enough gas to run up or down when I got back there. So I basically cut it super close.
Yeah.
And went down with the ship per se in that one area after I caught that one.
Crazy.
Yeah, Brian was there in like 2011 or 2012, the last time Skeeter provided boats to the nation.
That's crazy.
So awesome to you. You jump all the way to second, right behind Kobe after day two. I fall all the way back to 18th from sixth, but I was number two in the Northern Division, so I got to fish day three. But I'm like 8 pounds back of the lead and like 3-4 pounds out of the check range, which isn't crazy, but like guys caught them on day three. I mean, people caught them. So like I would have had to have like a 20-pound bag to make classic at that point or something crazy. Like I could have probably caught them better. Why don't I talk about my day three quick first and then we'll talk about your day. So my day three, I was like, I'm not going back up to the spillway. I don't want to mess with the guys that are in contention up there. Cause like really, and it's like, I don't know. I'm going to learn something about this river and go down swinging, try some things. Right. And I know I had that one good bite and I know there's some good fish in the river. I didn't know where you guys were fishing. But the thing is like, I pull out and I start to turn left and I see the guy from Zimbabwe start right across. And I was like, really? And I go like a little bit further down and I see another boat and I go a little bit further down. And I see another boat. And I was like, dude, there's like half the top 10 is fishing right within sight of the ramp in the morning. And I'm like, man, I missed something here. I go down, fish that area that I wanted to fish on day one that I couldn't make it. And I just kind of run new water back and coming up the river. I catch a handful of dinky spots and little largemouth, nothing that measures. I run up, I fish that stretch where you and Nick were fishing. And I fished that first day of practice really hard, never got a bite. But then I jumped up to where those really like orange riprap rocks just outside that lake with that big steel wall.
Yeah.
On the right side. Yep, just before Darbone.
That one big
and I catch leaning, a couple of, what's that?
That one big leaning steel wall. Corrugated.
And then it's like rocks that are out, and then it turns into a riprap, and then, right?
Yeah, it looks good.
And I caught a little short spot, and I caught a really small keeper spot, another short spot, and I was like, oh, I caught a fish. All right, whatever.
Yeah.
So I start running up, and I was like, oh, I want to go try that one area in Darboan again where I missed that fish yesterday. I get in there, and I actually fished the mouth of Darboan really hard where you had started on day one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like mid-morning.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. Oh, this is good. Go, keep going.
Oh, don't tell me. I will literally punch you to the screen. But anyways, I run up, get sucked in that. I fish that spot super hard. I'm the only one in the boat. I'm super quiet. I turn my electronics off. It's just me. I'm like, I'm going to be super stealthy. I'm going to pick it apart.
Yep.
Never get a sniff. Wow. Run a few other places up there around Holland's Bluff. Maybe catch a short. Maybe don't. Caught a crappie. Got one measly, probably 10-ounce spot in the live well. I mean, he was tiny. I run back out to the river. I see Dustin coming by the mouth of Darboan. He's hitting that corner as I come out. And I shoot across and start going up. Start fishing just below where Cheetah stuck that one. And I catch two keeper spots pretty quick on a spinner bait, and I fish a bunch of stuff up towards that lake, and I catch a couple shorts and fish some of that stuff on the way back, end up with three fish for 2.7.
Wow.
So I had a 12 and a half, a 13, and a 14 incher, and they only weighed 2 pounds, 7 ounces.
Dude, it's crazy how someone weighed in a 7-ounce fish.
But right after I caught my second spot, I'm fishing up that bank, and here comes this old ranger coming down river with like 2 hours to go, and he swings in and he's like, I'm heading in. I'm about done. Do you remember that?
You were on the left hand side, huh?
Yeah. You pulled up on me and you're like, I think I'm done. I'm heading in. I got pretty lucky today.
Yeah, I was pretty like lost for words at that point. But I didn't know, you know, I was trying to keep myself honest, and I was trying to keep the expectation in check, because I knew that I had enough to just stay in the top three.
Right.
So that's all like I would allow my head to get there. Yeah, man. I'll let you finish your story.
I knew I was like, I didn't even catch enough weight to catch the guy in 10th place to get a check, even if he's zeroed. Right. So I was like, whatever, come in, get it on the stage, get to thank everybody, get to see all those kids from the local high school.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then just kind of take in the show at that point. Yeah. Like there wasn't any pressure. Like I fished really hard all morning, and I fished with intensity, and I fished with urgency, but I didn't have pressure. Because I was so far back. Like I wanted to do well. I wanted to make something happen. I wanted to have that Cinderella story, because like I had this premonition the whole time. Like I got into like lacrosse so late, last minute, and then I almost win it. And then like it just felt like it was so meant to be. And then I go out and catch them the next day. And then I stumbled day two, but I get into the cut. And I was like, well, you still have a chance, right? And like I felt like it was all set up, and then you know, it just didn't happen on day three. But it was fun to be there, because the year before at Pickwick, I missed the cut by 2 ounces. I finished 11th and missed by 2 ounces, and was third in my region.
So
2 years in a row, I came out swinging top five or six, you know, day one, and then just couldn't back it up.
That's killer, man. It's hard to do. Cause I mean, sure. Like the regionals, I mean, just like out West, I'm sure like your boat fields are at least over 50, you know? But yeah, that's wild.
I mean, we had 90 boats at lacrosse, I think.
Gee.
Yeah. So day three, you roll out and you just, did it come easy? Like, how did it go down?
Okay. So obviously, we get the news of, we get the news of Aaron. And so that was pretty hectic. It's so funny because, like, Kobe's in front of me. I know that he had kind of sniffed out what I was doing, because, you know, he had, at this point, he's like, I just made a decision and I'm going to stick to my decision. And I was listening to him like, oh, you sucker, you're going to stay on the main river, aren't you? and you had a feeling that I was cranking. All right, whatever. But I knew, like,
he ran up to a lake up north, didn't he?
He did. But then he stayed south too. He ran up north early, I think. But so my game plan, I knew at least Zach from Arizona was going to go hit the mouth of Darbone. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dax. So I knew that also my boat, not being a fast one, I knew that everyone was going to be able to blow by me, like no problem on the main river. And so I was thinking too, okay, we're going to have, it's post frontal, it's bluebird. I need to catch them during low light, mm-hmm. and I need to get three in the boat quick, or else it's going to be like a super grind. And so that was my goal. Three fish before 10:30. And move, never get settled in and move, bounce the good stuff that I thought looked good, follow my intuition and just keep covering water. And so I shot left and I went south, and I didn't fish south. Like first day of practice, it was the only time I went south. So I had saw something that looked good in practice, and, you know, bass just being like professional murderers, I know that even if they get released and they get caught one day, doesn't mean that the very next day they're going to set up and they're going to want to kill something in the morning. And so I tie on a chartreuse crank, and I didn't fish a chartreuse crank the whole tournament or practice. And I put my trolling motor down and I start, again, I'm able to change my angle because I don't have a co with me. I don't have my graphs on either. And I start cranking, and my third or fourth cast, I stick a 3.5 pounder. And I check to see how good she has it. She has my back treble, and I have both of her lips buttoned shut with my back treble. And I get her head up and I get her in the boat. I don't even try to, like, I just like swing her in. I'm like, all right, that's a start. I weigh her 3.5. I was like, all right. So we go idle up, right? I get on bass track. I'm like, 2.8. Just to like kick it over a little bit and like to add a little bit of drama. I mean, I worked in the entertainment industry for a while, you know, it's like, you got to have fun with it. So I'm like, 2.8, and I'm going to just put my phone away. And I just put the phone away for the rest of the day. It was the same unknown balsa crank. That was it. So black back, chartreuse, triple grips. That was the deal. And so I get that fish in, I'm pumped, put it in bass track. I see Justin coming down the South African, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got a freaking solid fish in here. And it's not even 10 minutes in. Guys are still blasting off. And I had put that fish in the box. That was like a huge like confidence boost and a relaxing moment. I saw Justin and he's like, I'm like, how you doing, mate? And he's like, oh, nothing yet. And he's like, you got anything? And I'm like, yeah, 3.5 pounder. He's like, ah, you cunt. and he's like, you took my fish. And I'm like, ah, oh, bud. And he laughs because, you know, we made good friends. He was parked right next to me in the boatyard. And he's like, hey, would you do me a favor? And I'm like, what's that? He's like, hey, would you leave that that houseboat and behind the houseboat for me? And I was like, of course, dude, I'm out. And so I fish another like 50 yards up. I pull the trolling motor and I get out of there. I roll up on that little, that bend, you know, where Nick and I were fishing, that bend, yep. I pull up.
You stop on the little like rock, little, yep. Like little, that little point that he was actually sitting on.
That little point, and then past it where the riprap starts. Yep. I stick a line burner, literally like just goes. And I'm like, whew, get her in the box.
12 ounce,
like, literally. Yeah. Like 10 ounce. If that, get up on pad, bounce to the other side. I didn't fish that riprap. I catch a short. I'm like, whatever, keep moving. Bounce. Fish a couple different things that I've never stopped at that like look good. Just stopped, fished it real quick, kept moving. Stopped at the tree that Dustin stuck a couple out of, you know. And then I turned around and I ran down that. I didn't get anything else. I'm like, okay. Camera boat, Dayton hits me up. He's like, hey dude, where are you at? And I'm like, okay. So I send him my location, And he pulls up on me and he's like, hey, do you got any? I'm like, I got a 3-pounder. Let me hold it up for you. And it's like, I pull out the 3-pounder. I'm like death gripping this thing in the middle of my boat. And I was like, I don't want to do this, like, you know, mess this thing up. And so he gets a couple photos. He's stoked. I know he's trying to do this.
You didn't want to have a Jim Bitter moment.
Oh my gosh. I death gripped that thing. And man, and he definitely tore me up. Throw in the box and start working. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go hit the mouth of the bayou real fast. He's like, all right, dude, good luck, man. And so he takes off. I pull in and I put down still on the main river. And I, unlike the prior days where I'm swinging a little bit wider, I pull in really tight and I pick up the spinnerbait. And I just start, you know, slowly winding the spinnerbait through all the trees and boom, swing, keep grinding, 3.5-pounder. Right at the mouth of Darbone. And I had a feeling that everyone was going to hit it early. And after the experience at day one, just knowing that those fish didn't bite and that me and the other guy that knows how to fish, like, didn't get a single bite the way through, I'm like, maybe they are turned off by the pressure when boats are coming into that channel. And so that's why I had a feeling, you know what, that bayou still has shade cover at 10 o'clock. And then after that, the sun swings and it kind of gets a little bit of sun, but I knew that it was still going to be in shade then. And so, yeah, when I pulled in there, I caught that fish. I was like, dude, it's 10:15. I just hit my goal. Like, I'm pumped. Yeah, so I probably just missed you.
I was going to try, did you hit it just before me or just after me? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I think, yeah, it was probably around anywhere from like 10:15 to 10, probably 10:30, like on the mark. And so I start bouncing my main river stuff, and I catch another short, and it was just a little guy. So I got four fish in the box, and it's around 12:30. And I'm like, okay, I still have some time. All I need to do is like flip up, another 4-pounder like I did the other day, start flipping again, nothing, pick up a spinnerbait, you know, just kind of jump fishing. And, after
10:38,
huh?
You went there just before me. I got there at like 10:38.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Then I literally just pulled out.
Well, good for you, Maddie.
You're like, you suck. And so I,
because did you jump across fishing after that?
Huh?
Did you jump across the river after you finished fishing it?
I fished it in, and then there's that slough that cuts the left. Like when you come in, so you come into Darbone, like the idle, like main river, come in, left hand side, fish that. I caught that fish there. I fished it all the way down. There's the cypress nubs, and then there's another slough if you hang a left. I pulled into that slough. I fished it all the way down. I was like, you know what? I got a wild hair. I'm going to come up in there. I went up in, started fishing some of the stuff. I didn't turn on my graph. I turned on my graph and I said it was 2.5 foot. I was like, dude, they're not going to be in here. I like turn my graph off, turn around, idle out. Get out of there, head up north, crank a little bit, catch that short, keep going. Literally a couple weeks ago, I got to fish with K Pink at the US Open.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. Got to talk with him, and he did this Bass U talk on like what's his favorite conditions for square billing, and he talks about bluebird skies and post frontal, and I'm like, why would he say that? Like, that is like the absolute polar opposite of what people think of like when it comes to cranking conditions. And it made sense because it's in a reaction bite. Like, you smash a fish in the face, he's gonna eat that thing no matter what time of day it is, and it can be midday, and you know, as long as you hit the right target, that fish will eat it. And so literally his voice like pops into my head, like bluebird skies, post frontal. I'm like, oh my gosh, pick up the square bill again, start firing up this one stretch that I had not fished, but it's funny because I didn't even really realize it was there. I fished this bend and I look up and it was like the heavens opened up and I saw this stretch and I was like, I've never seen that. I'm like, I'm going to go hit that stretch. And something pulled me over that stretch. I go over that stretch and I start fishing that stretch. and there's these perfect cypress gnails that are just like a couple inches under the water, and like they would be in small little bunches, like 2, 3, and then another like 15, 20 yards, and then another one, and then another 10 yards, and like 3. And I get like 3 cranks on this one, and it just stops, and it boils, and I get kind of hung up. My drag slips a second, and I keep on it, and I just kind of keep the steady pressure, and then she comes off of the stump, and my heart's pounding. I'm looking down. I just want to see how good she has it, and I notice that she has it good in her mouth, and I do a rod directional change to get her head up. Her head comes up, and as soon as her head comes up out of the water, I boat flip her in the boat, and that's when I like, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, and you guys are gonna see it in a couple of weeks, but I grab the fish, and I'm like, I think I have a shot at this thing, but then I'm like, no, check expectations, you know, keep me like. At least we might be going to the classic, you know, but this is insane. I can't believe, you know, I just caught this fish, but like I knew in my head that I at least had 10 pounds. And I just remember, you know, going into it, if I can catch 10 to 11 pounds a day, I'll be okay. And I knew that I had it then, but I didn't know, like I said earlier, I just didn't want to get my hopes up. And so I go up, I start flipping again. I stick another spot on a jig. Thing smokes it, doesn't like gum it, just like boom. I'm like, whoa. And then like, yeah.
The spots would eat it.
Dude, smoke it. And I got this spot so good, and it came out like, I thought I brained this thing. And I was like, shit, I'm going to have a dead fish. Like, this isn't good, you know? And I look at him, I'm like, get her to live real quick. I like call out that line burner, and I keep checking on the spot. Spot's doing okay. And I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to start making my way back. At this point, it's about 1 o'clock. And that's when I'm like, I'm heading back. Like Yeah. Well, I had a couple moments where I was like, my intuition was saying, stop and fish this. Stop. Why are you blowing by this again? Like, stop and fish it. And so I was like, no, keep going. Just get back to the ramp, man. Like, just get close within trolling motor distance, because like you just don't, like, you don't know.
You have a 1990 bass boat. Like,
I have a 1990 bass boat, you know, it's 2 years like younger than me, you know. It's like I just didn't want to take any chances. There's actually a stretch where I'm like, you know what, let me just swing for it a little bit. I tie on a swim bait, like an 8-inch paddle tail, and I skip some of the laydowns that I had fished the stretch, and I knew that, you know, I didn't get bit on that stretch, but I was like, you know what? Maybe they'll eat a bigger bait. Maybe. And if I stick one, it's going to be a good one. And so I fished the swim bait for probably about like a half an hour, 45 minutes. That's when Taylor pulls up in the middle, in his tin boat. I was like, sup, dude. He's like, sup, you get him? And I was like, like maybe 10 pounds. And I was like, you get him? He's like, yeah, I sacked him. And I was like, nice, what do you got? He's like, like 13, maybe 14. I was like, dude, you did good. What'd you get yesterday? And he's like, 17. I was like, I still got you. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, I probably had like 10 pounds. I got 2 squeakers. He's like, what are your good ones? I was like, I got 3 that are like 3.5. He's like, dude, you have like 11 or 12 pounds. I'm like, I don't know, something like that. He's just like, gets back on pad, starts hitting down. So I get on pad. I'm like, I want to hit that rip rat stretch one last time, but I'm going to hit it way early. And I hit that stretch. I go down, change color, go back up, change color, go down. I do it 4 times because I'm like, no one's hit it. I'm going to just kind of fish around this area. I don't want to go. I know as soon as I get into the idle zone, there's going to be 10 boats. And sure enough, you know, like I turn the corner and there's 10 boats, everyone fishing like super close. And so I'm like, oh man, all right, whatever. Let me pull around, start fishing a Senko again up against the, in the backs of some of those houseboats and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I'm like, maybe they'll eat this, you know. I was just kind of, at this point, I was just buying, like, just trying to kill time. But then in the back of my head, I was like, you know what, if you didn't fish super hard to the very end and someone catches you, you're a freaking idiot. And I just like kept thinking in my head, I'm like, this can come back and haunt me and bite me so bad if I didn't grind it out and I played it safe. And that was a valuable lesson, even though, like,
right. I want to you want to play it smart, not safe, right? Like,
yeah, I was just like, oh my, and so that was the conflict in my heart, you know, and so when we came in and Taylor goes, yeah, and I'm like, oh god, and he caught that last 4-pounder with 5 minutes left, and he's like, dude, I got like 16 pounds. I was like, dang, dude. And then like someone else, like I'm horrible at math, and someone was like, dude, I think you still have them. Like, how much you got? And I'm like, 10.5, maybe 11. And he's like, yeah, dude, I think as long as you have 10.5, I think you still have them. And I'm like, okay, I got that. I asked Kobe. I'm like, Kobe, sack him? He looks at me. He's like, yeah, dude, 18 pounds. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, nah, man, I got like 5.5, maybe 6 pounds. I was like, oh. And so I was like, I was feeling good at this point because I was like, all right. Like I assumed in my head, with another 10-11.5 pound bag, at least I'm going to get top three. So I started, you know, after I talked to you, talked to a couple other people, I'm like, okay, I think I'm sitting in the top three. I don't know where. And here comes Chris Johnson with the other old Ranger. And I was like, when I seen him, like him and his wife, I was like, old Ranger gang. And like, we nodded at each other at the gas station and whatnot during practice. And he had stopped and checked in on me on the river. And he's like, you got him? I was like, and I had 3 pounds three fish at the time. And he's like, I got one fish. And I'm like, dude, you got time, man. And so he comes in. I was like, what, did you sack him? You fill out your limit? He's like, I did. And I'm like, nice, dude. Like, what'd you get? He's like, 13 pounds. And I was like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, like maybe even 14. And I was like, dang, what'd you have yesterday? And he's like, like 22 pounds. I'm like, all right, you just want it. Like in my head, like I was like, oh, okay, he just won. I was like, well, see, and that's why I don't get my hopes up. Like literally, that was exactly what I told myself. I was like, that's why you don't get your hopes up right there. You just did it. Look over to Ben Bird, who's right next to me, another West Coast dude. And, thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Ben Burgles, he's like, dude, he's probably small on it too. Like if he says he has 13 pounds, he probably has like 14. And I was like, great. So I was... And at that point, I was like, you know what? At least I'm going to the Classic. That was my goal. Like that was I'm more than stoked. And so they pull us out, and you know, this was like probably one of my highlights. Is when we get in line, the bump tank, and like where the bump boards, he like checks the fish out, and like these two kids come up to me. They're like, hey, Mister, can you sign my hat? I'm like, of course, dude. And like sign their hat. Talk to him about fishing a little bit, and they're weighing Chris Johnson at this time, and I just don't really pay attention because I'm paying attention to these kids. And that's when I see you, I see Nathan, I see Zach and Jake, and you guys are all walking up, and you guys like, dude, like I think you have it. And I'm like, no, dude, the guy in the old Ranger like hasn't weighed in yet. They're like, yeah, he just weighed 10 pounds. And I'm like, no, the guy in the old Ranger hasn't weighed in yet. He said he had 13 pounds. Like, and I think it was Zach. He's like, no, dude, he has 10 pounds. He just weighed. And I see his boat pull away. And then that's when like, it like hits me. And that's when I just turn white. And I like, basically like, I'm like, I think I just won this thing. But again, myself, like hearing, like, just like being able to like check my expectation. I was like, no. Like, it's not over till the fat lady sings. No fat lady has sung yet. Like, check myself. Like, you know, Kobe could be BSing me and he's going to come. Like, I've had dudes in California do that. Like, oh, I got like 12 pounds and go up and weigh a 16 pound bag. It's like, you know, I'm like, oh, gosh, I don't want to even entertain it. And so I kicked Taylor out of the hot seat and I'm like, get out of here.
Like, yeah, when I walked up to you, you looked like you were about ready to puke.
Dude. Yeah.
How'd the footage turn out? Did it turn out? Can you use it?
All of it did. Yeah. What you took? That was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have the screen grab from YouTube. Yeah.
But actually, they don't have the day three and weigh in up.
Oh, they don't? Well, I think they got the, I'm going to pick
it up. Yeah, they have your clip on YouTube.
I'll probably end up like pulling that clip off. But when they bumped Taylor, and Taylor is funny because we've had like a little rivalry, but like
that's how you like point or like,
yeah, I'm like, because he, you know, he bumped me out in Havasu, you know, he had it, you know, and I wish I had more gas because I knew that I had to run to the river to get a limit, but I didn't have enough gas to make that run. and he ended up taking it. And I was impressed because he's like, yeah, I've been to the Classic before. I'm like, dude, you're a freaking stud, dude. I'm like, good job. But I want my revenge. And that's what, you know, and so when I got to kick him off that seat, that felt good. And, you know, and then from there, I just couldn't wait for Kobe to bring up his bag to the scale. You know, I was just so anxious at that point. And I completely forgot about the prize money. I forgot about the boat. I forgot about the elites, all of that. I was so in the moment of fishing and trying to be connected on the last day that I literally forgot about all those things until I was sitting down and John said, hey, you know, if you make it, are you going to fish the elites? And it was just so surreal to me that was even like an option. And of course, like being in my position, I'm not married. I don't have kids. And when he said that, I'm like, this has been a lifelong dream for me. You know, like as much as I only started bass fishing, tournament bass fishing, like in 2018, like I was a little kid playing with a Bass Pro truck and bass boat I would fill up the tub only a quarter away just so I had a ramp and I would play in there for hours with my imagination, like, you know, launch the boat and like go and fish and then put it back on. And I remember that so vividly. I must have been 7 or 8 years old. It's always been my dream to have a bass boat. And so when he said, like, well, you fish the Classic or would you fish the elites? And I'm like, dude, hell yeah, man. Like, I've always wanted to do this. And I've, you know, working in Hollywood and working in LA, it's just, the place is just, it's toxicity. You know, the money's great. And I've learned a lot and I've made a lot of connections and I've met a lot of like really good people, but my profession is to make other people look good. You know, my profession is like to be, I'm a technical lighting director for still photography. So I like, you know, light these celebrities and make them look good. But in the reality, like all I'm doing is I'm making them more famous. I'm making the photographer way more money and I'm only getting a small little sliver. But then the best part of that is that I had the freedom to go and fish as much as I wanted to. And so that was the biggest gift, but I've been looking and searching and trying to find a way out of this industry because it's like, dude, you just get stuck into it. And it just becomes such a grind where you're like, oh my gosh, like I this sucks. You know, I have to bite my tongue all the time because just, I don't have to say anymore. It's Los Angeles, you know?
Yeah.
And so the fact that this has given me an opportunity to step away from something that I fell into the industry and I'm grateful for it, but I've been looking for a way out. And the fact that I got this opportunity and have the biggest win of my life and with the biggest opportunity of my life, there's no way in hell it's going to turn it down. And so, yeah, when Kobe put that bag up there and it said, I saw in the little corner, there's a smaller readout before John said anything. It said 6-2 or something like that. That's when my heart really dropped. And I was like, holy crap, dude, I just won the national championship. And yeah, super special.
That's sweet, dude.
Yeah. So
you are fishing the elites. It's official.
Like it's official. I
said the moment you were all in, but now you also have like deposits down, you're ready to go.
Yep.
So you're headed to St. John's or Harris Chain or wherever they're kicking things off and
February
or March.
St. John's first, Harris Chain.
Which is basically then, like its title. It should be just like the Delta. You should be right at like home. I mean,
I'm already doing a bunch of research on it, and I feel good about those first two stops already, and I'm pretty stoked about that. And then Hartwell, I've already done a bunch of research too, and now I'm like feeling really good about Hartwell too because that sets up like a lot of California lakes. So, yeah, I'm excited, man. I really am.
Like let's talk. It's like so the Bass Nation's Nation's best package.
Yeah,
they're giving you basically a lease, a 1 year lease on a.
It's Ranger like a 1 year lease, L,
basically a gifted lease for a year, basically. Mm-hmm. So a 520L Ranger with a 250 Merc on it, right?
Yeah.
You get use of a truck.
No,
that's not a thing anymore. Yeah. Used to be a truck.
But used to be a truck. Yeah. So if anyone out there owns a dealership or if you guys know, and this is like seriously when I need to lean on the community because the community has been so like so epic on this bit, like helping me get connect, because next year is going to cost me $100,000. That's it. Like it, next year is going to cost me $100,000, win, lose, or draw. And so, and I don't, and that's not even including a truck or a truck payment. So I've been working literally since last week, Monday, on accruing like sponsorships and whatnot. And I haven't inked anything in yet, but like the one biggest piece that is missing for me is a truck. So if anyone that's watching this and that can help me out with this, is like, that would be so huge. If you could connect me with like a dealership or someone that would be down to like help me with a lease or anything like that, that is the one thing that I need. Preferably something that's like diesel or, you know, like a bigger truck, because I'm thinking about getting a camper, just to save more money. I got into this apartment like a little over like about a year ago. I have to get rid of it because, you know, I can't, I'm not going to be here.
For if anybody's looking months. For a sublet option in Los Angeles, yeah, looking for an apartment.
I'm 5 minutes away from the beach, dude. This place is sick. I wish I didn't have to get rid. Like, honestly, there's like a lot of things that's with the win. It's also, you know, it's, thanks Kevin. It's a lot because, you know, my life's changed. And it's everything I've always asked for, but with this, it's come like this massive, massive mountain of logistical troubleshooting. So yeah,
you're basically like getting rid of your home. You're basically like, you're going to live on the road this year, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm guaranteed at least 2 years on the elites with the Bass Nation berth, which is really cool. Cause I think through FLW and the other ones, I think you only get 1 year. So I'm guaranteed 2 years.
Get, like, you get a portion of the entry fees, but you're not getting a free ride.
Do not get a free ride at all. No, they give you 19 grand on the back end. So, which is just a little bit, I think about half, but on the back end. So you still have to front 45 grand. So like
you have to pay the upfront payments and then they cover the last deposit or whatever.
Well, not even that. I think it comes at the very end of the year. I think it's just a reimbursement.
Or the last third or whatever. Yeah. But like,
yeah. But yeah, man. I'm excited. I mean, I'm still like my dry erase board's like completely full. I just started this book literally on last Monday, and I'm already like, you know, just everything from notes to on locations to connections and then budgeting. It's crazy. I'm almost done with like a pitch deck that I've been working on the past like few days, and just trying to get all my ducks in line, man, because, you know, I know with this opportunity comes the responsibility too, that if I half-ass this at all, I'm going to regret it. And I'm going to look back on it and be like, dude, you could have tried more. So I've literally been like losing sleep over it, cause I've been spending so much time just like, and on top of that, having to edit like my capture fish stuff. But I'm
enjoying, you might start putting out two videos a week so you can get a little more YouTube money.
Oh yeah, dude. I need to start doing like the whole like Randy Blockett thing. Like, hey guys, Eliza, quiet down. Block is hilarious, dude. And it's so cool because
too bad you don't have kids in the back seat to drive around with while you're, dude, like.
I mean, I think it, what is like one of the stipulations to be on the elites? You have to have like a wife and a dog and a camper. But yeah, man, it's crazy. But
that's awesome. It's too bad you're not like an easier guy to pull for. Otherwise, I'd cheer for you. But
oh well, thanks. I'm gonna be a dick.
So you caught a ton of fish on a spinnerbait, right? I would say like half your fish were weighed on. What was your spinnerbait? Was that like a single Colorado, like a special?
It was a double. Let me get it real quick. The collection.
You ever got a spinnerbait pack for the Elite Tour? Look at them.
Yeah, I'm already set on spinnerbaits. Oh, this one's a cool one. So this was one I picked up in Oklahoma, and I got smoked on this one in practice, and that was like a 3-pounder.
I tried to ask what Nathan was throwing through a spinnerbait. He was catching more of them, but
yeah, you should ask. They're all basically War Eagles, with the exception of the custom, with a couple of the custom ones. Okay. There was and that's another one.
Yeah,
yeah. So with that little red blade on it. And then I was throwing a chartreuse single curly tail as a trailer. I'm not showing them the juice, dude. Don't worry, bro. Gosh.
Wait, what? This is like Bassy. You have to show the juice.
I already showed you guys the juice. Oh yeah, check this out. So this is another one of those cranks. I made sure to retie every 10 minutes when I was cranking. I checked my line. If it had any time of a fray, I'd retie. I was cranking with 15-pound fluoro because I kept breaking off mono in practice. I checked the knot, and I pulled out the eyelet.
Hmm.
And if I had not checked that, that would have been a 3-pound bass that I had pulled it out on. So
that's weird that you're breaking off on mono.
Yeah, I mean, it could be old. It could be old mono or something like that. But like, yeah,
was it like some of that Charlie and XL that you got in a bass pack when you lived in Hawaii when you were like 12 or what?
from circa 1995. Yeah, probably. But yeah, I'm not gonna crank with that mono again. But yeah.
I see what you did there, Mitchell.
You're so funny. You're funny, I should say. I've heard I'm really interested to see how like Dave Mercer and all these other dudes like have fun, because everyone's just gonna have like a blast with my name. But I'm like, come on, guys! Like, I grew up with this. You got to impress me, man, to really get me to laugh. Because otherwise, I've heard it all.
Yeah, the spinnerbait was a deal for me too. Like, this was like the spinnerbait I ordered before I left. And I pretty much ran with this thing the whole way. It's a half ounce Bassman compact spinnerbait.
Dude, it looks good. So
it's a half ounce. It's kind of small profile. I went with this, what they call a mag willow or a turtleback. Kind of a hybrid. Because I just felt like, well, this is the one that Jacobson runs with, right? And the fighter throws him. And
is it a mollusk?
No, it's a Bassman.
Bassman, okay.
And they hold up really well, the pike in Minnesota. And I knew it would be like, okay, this is not something other people are going to throw. They may throw something like, but like everybody's going to have a war eagle and right? Like people like that's, you know, an accent or a covert, right? But I wanted this. And then I put this little 3.5-inch Arsenal minnow, this little paddle tail on there, because
it looks killer.
I wanted to bulk it up a little bit. But I want it to be small, right? Because I knew from being there in the past, like, bites are a premium. So you want something that moves some water in the dirty water, but you want something that, like, if they're going to eat it, they're not going to miss it, right? Like,
yeah.
And you want a little bit of thump. And a half ounce, you can work. And the other thing I liked about having a trailer is, especially on the cypress stumps, I felt like it gave it a stall. When it first hit the water while you were cranking it, or, like, when you popped it, right, it would hover for, like, an extra – tenth of a second, right? You'd get just that extra little bit of rate of stall, I guess is what I would call it.
I mean, dude,
which I think is important down there. And yeah, that was my setup. And I ran this on 20-pound big game.
Oh wow. Yeah, I was spinner baiting with 17. 17.
And I went to mono because I knew thought I'd spend more time in the backwaters of Bayou, where I was in like really shallow stumps where you're like constantly pulling it over. I ended up fishing more bank stuff like you did, where it wasn't so hard, like you, but yeah. Chartreuse, huh?
The truce, bro.
The truce. If the I would have done chartreuse, I would have caught 12 pounds on day two.
Oh man. Yeah,
that's the bass, man. I don't know.
Oh, cool.
If anybody needs some Bassmans, you can go on Omnia. Use the code that's scrolling across the bottom.
Ooh.
These are the Arsenal Tactical Minnows. These are little swim bait trailers I got on the back.
Ooh, the Arsenal. Oh, that's cool. That's awesome that there's so many that come in a pack, you know? I like that.
So
that's rad.
But that was my setup. Caught one fish on a fighting frog, but I thought it was a really good, like, you know, I didn't have any of my co's snipe me on the stuff I was fishing with spinnerbaits.
Yeah, don't have Nathan fish with you, because you'll snipe everything, bro.
I mean, like, I feel like it wasn't like leaving fish. Right. It didn't seem like I was leaving fish behind me with that spinnerbait, but I don't know.
Good stuff. Yeah. Man.
So Hunter wants to know what kind of rod you were throwing spinnerbaits on.
Yeah, for sure, Hunter. I was throwing the spinnerbait on a Levante EMTF, which is the Extreme Mission Type F Mega Bass Rod. Hold on, give me a sec. I'll get it for you.
throwing. Okay, I'm gonna show you guys two rods, the two main rods that I.
Oh, time's up. Gotta go.
Really?
Gosh, if it said gullible on the ceiling, I'd read it. Let's see, where is that it? That's the 5.7. That might be it. I think. Hold on.
Oh boy. Hopefully you're more organized come St. John's, but just saying.
Yeah, let's. You don't want to see my living room right now. It's a mess. I think this is it.
Hopefully Punch Fishing is still here because he's a big Mega Bass fanboy, so hopefully he gets to.
That's the Diablo Spec R. I mean, that's another one that I was utilizing. Yeah, that's true. We almost got DQ'd because we almost missed the mandatory angler meeting. But yeah, this is the Diablo Spec R. I was just fishing it with the SLX 17-pound fluoro. And then the other rod... I think this is it. I believe so. Oh yeah, no, that's what it was. It wasn't an EMTF. Sorry, I lied. It was the Tour Versatile.
You can't trust elite guys. They just lie through their teeth.
So yeah, it's a Tour Versatile. Yeah, I just liked how this rod, you know, it being like a 7-foot rod, you can still be kind of accurate with it. I really like the Diablo Spec R for chatterbaits and whatnot. Like, you can really get the feel for a vibrating jig. That's a really great rod. But yeah, it was a Tour Versatile for my spinnerbait. And then for the crankbait, I was utilizing, and this is the Flat Side Special, another Mega Bass Levante series rod. And then I was just fishing it on a, I think it's like, this is a 7.3, 7.4, sorry, 7.4 to 1, Corrado, 15-pound. Nice. Yeah, super, super whippy tip. Great little cranking rod for any type of square bill applications and whatnot. And then, yeah, I actually busted out a non-Mega Bass rod for my backup crank stick, which is, I actually caught my PB on like a few years ago, which is a Shimano Crucial. But yeah, the P5. Yeah. Lefty. Yeah. I grew up, righty, if you will. And then as soon as I started fishing the Delta and got into flipping, I was like, this takes too much time. So that's when I went all the left. Kind of never look back from there. But if someone gives me a right-handed bait caster, just as fine. Pretty ambidextrous.
I've learned to cast with my left hand. I've never learned how to reel with my left hand.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the bigger, because like all the big bait casters for giant trevallies in Hawaii are like the old school boat, and they have both sides. But yeah. I think with fishing the Delta and flipping, I got used to the lefties. And then I still have like all my arsenal back home in Hawaii is all righties. So I'll go home and then like, I'll go right back into using all my righties and I'll come here. I probably should, when I get on tour, have a couple righties. So if I start getting fatigued when I rip bait or something like that, like be able to switch over. But yeah, not 10. I feel you because, I need to get some, actually I have a date tonight.
So. Nice. You gonna like go out to get a date? Actually, get some food. Like eat something.
Like might eat something. Maybe not. We'll see.
Nice. But, dude, yeah, no, like it's been pretty long. This is a little bit longer than usual. Like there was a lot of ground to cover. Like it's hard to get you to open up and talk, Maddie. If we could just get you to share a little more, then you know.
Gotta get me all liquored up, bro. Yeah, dude, I had a blast, man. Thank you again, really, for having me on. And yeah, I look forward to this next coming season, and I really look forward to actually stopping through. Maybe when I'm going through somewhere, I'll give you a shout out, and
The good thing, Daniel, I think she's going to pay for it tonight.
So. You got a sugar mama. What are you talking about? Yeah, but maybe I'll bop down to La Crosse or something like that and say hi. La Crosse isn't far from me.
That'd be rad.
Yeah, and I might. Obviously, you can't get help on the river, but like I might have some, maybe know some people in La Crosse that could maybe save you some lodging, maybe.
Dude, that would be huge, man. That would be huge. And if anyone knows anyone in any of the stops next year, man, I'm open to it just because I'm on a budget, you know. But I also want to fish mentally free. I don't want to have to worry about cashing a check to be able to survive. So it's kind of my goal. Yeah, dude.
So people can follow you. Where do you want people to follow you? Capture Fish on Instagram or what? Where do you want?
Yeah, Maddie Wong, Maddie underscore Wong on Instagram. I'm kind of shifting gears from that being my photo photography thing. And I started Capture Fish because I was posting too many fish selfies and my friends were like, yo, dude, take it to two. And so I started Capture Fish as a content creation suite for fishing brands. So that's why you won't see photos of a face. The only element of a human you'll see on Capture Fish is a hand at most. Because it's all about the fish and the lures and whatnot on Capture Fish. On my personal page, which is Maddie underscore Wong, you'll see me gripping and grinning and all that good stuff. And then also, if you want to subscribe to my YouTube, which is Capture Fish, that's kind of like the vlog.
So yeah, go watch some of his videos, give him some thumbs up, check out some of his videos, see how he got there. That'll be definitely a way to help him out on a very small way. If you can watch a few videos like that, that all helps.
It definitely does. But awesome. Thanks again, guys.
Yeah, I'll let you get on your date. I got a few things to wrap up, but I don't want to keep you much longer if you want to head out. And appreciate it. And we'll stay in touch, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much, man. I'm looking forward to talking with you again soon. And thanks again for having me.
Take it easy, man.
All right, dude. Later.
Later. Yeah, so awesome. 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 That was such a sweet story. Sweet guest. I was super excited to talk to Maddie. I actually didn't meet Maddie until day two after I found out that I was fishing day three. In the meeting, I walked up to him and he was wearing his chesty. And I was like, well, it takes a super special kind of nerd to wear a chesty or a GoPro at a camera. So I struck up a conversation. We talked and kind of hit it off and talked to him on the bus the final day and all that kind of stuff. And even before I won, I talked about he seems like a really cool dude. I want to have him on the screen even before he won. So awesome to do that. I feel like we could have talked to Maddie for 4 hours if we really wanted to. So maybe we'll follow up with him once he kind of maybe a preseason as we get a little closer, as he's setting things up for the season. It'd be really cool to get him talking more about the elite year versus the national championship. I think that would be a great stream as well. Awesome numbers tonight. We were rocking 80 plus live YouTube viewers. We had over 100 combined between Facebook and YouTube. So that's awesome. A couple things to note. I have all the links and descriptions. I'll put some of the stuff that he talked about down below, because a lot of that stuff you can get at Omnia, and I'll put all the stuff I did. My day three video will probably come out Friday. I hope to get it done this week so we can get extra videos this week. If you guys came in late, you can catch the replay, you can catch the podcast, but I want to talk about this quick. Next week, I got these boxes from Omnia right here. And I got another box from Omnia. So I've got two boxes. Both of these boxes are going to be opened and gave away next Wednesday night, the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. And there's two more boxes that our buddy Punch Fish and Brian Riesgraf. If you remember about a year ago during the holiday season, or maybe this spring, we gave away, we did we bought each other a $50 box on Omnia, sent it to each other blindly, opened them on streams, and we gave them away. This time we did two boxes each. So we're going to be four people are going to win boxes with the contents of these boxes next week on stream. So that's going to be awesome. That's going to be a really fun show. We're going to talk a lot of tackle. We're going to have fun. We're going to cut it up. We're going to kick it right before Thanksgiving, and give some people some stuff. A lot of you guys are shopping for Christmas presents. It's Thanksgiving. It's Black Friday. We want to give back to you guys. Anybody that's a member, if you win one of those boxes, I'm going to throw in another $10 Omnia gift card. And I think last week Pete said, if a member wins and I throw in a $10, he's going to match that $10. So all you members or anybody that wants to sign up to become a member, even at the lowest level before next week, increased opportunities. I also have I forgot I was going to do this today. I'm going to get this up real soon. I have a live or a seminar recording, like an hour and a half seminar I did for high school kids about power shallow fishing. That's going to go up on the members only content. So that's going to be the first piece of members only content for the members going up. I don't know if there's any other questions, anything else I want to cover. Thanks, Arsenal, obviously. Oh, and then I think in 2 weeks I might be on the Stray Cast show with a bunch of other Minnesota guys. So we might have to adjust our time on December 1st. We might stream late again on December 1st because we might go on Stray Cast earlier on Wednesday, and then we might have our show late. And then next week on the 24th, it's going to be a little bit later after my kids' hockey game. So we probably won't start streaming till 8:45. For that giveaway. So I know it'll be a little later, but I know a lot of people don't have to work on Thanksgiving. So I think some of you guys can stay up a little late on Thanksgiving Eve for that stream. We cover a lot of water. Appreciate everybody. My day three video will be coming out. Hopefully Maddie's videos will be coming out real soon. Check out his fishing. I'll be excited to watch his videos. He's got a good eye for the camera. He works in Hollywood and lighting. I thought he was going to maybe mock my stream lighting setup, but he didn't. So that's awesome. Thanks to everybody that like went out and got Dobbins rods from Omnia during the holiday sale. They sold a ton of rods. So a lot of you guys went out and bought rods and got good deals on them. So that's awesome. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. That's pretty much it. This is like a record long 2.5 hour stream. I think this is a good point. Obviously people are going to bed. If you came in late, you can catch the replay on Facebook or YouTube. Or on the podcast. Appreciate all you guys. What's up, Sean? Coming in late. Yeah, Punch, you missed it. We just talked to Mega Bass a little bit ago. So hopefully you saw that. And as always, here to help you guys catch more big bass and suck less. And thanks to all of you so much. Appreciate it a ton.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As always, thanks to all of you that hung in till the end of this podcast. This has been another episode of Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast Experience. Please consider sharing this with any of your bassin' buddies and friends. This is the best way for podcasts to grow is through word of mouth. Also, don't forget to search Hellebass on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, or just about anywhere else so that we can connect in more ways. As always, here to help you catch more bass and suck less.